aboard, you people. It is the Starship Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis. Now for another day of broadcast insights. He said.
Is this the point when everyone's going to get upset about the Bears' loss?
Yes. That's exactly what this is.
Usually is.
Exactly what's going to happen right now. Before I do that, let me tell you first what's coming up in the program.
That's a good idea.
Number one, I would like to welcome Lauren Lapka back.
Thank you.
To the
welcome
program.
Back, Lauren. Right. I've never been happier. I was flying during a Bears game.
Oh, man. Oh,
you weren't
man.
Able to watch it.
Yeah.
No. But I'm actually very happy I didn't.
Yeah. Yeah. Mm. Oh, boy. I'll save that for a moment. So we're welcoming her back to the program after a couple of weeks off. It was a birthday trip, but it's not your birthday. But we won't
Early
get into
birthday.
That. So here's the deal. Coming up on the program, we've got an amazing Chicago story. A group that's now called Green Card Veterans has been formed because they're trying to take care of the needs of folks that come to the United States, may not be U.S. citizens, and then go fight in wars for this country. And then they come back and get deported. One such Chicagoan had that happen to him. He is now a U.S. citizen. We will tell you about his journey. That's coming up at 3:40 today. Really interesting story.
Yeah, fascinating story.
Yeah. And then we have the McRib is back. I'm sorry, it's a bad comment. You know, one does not follow the other very well, but I'm going to tell you anyway.
Great segue, bro.
It was funny. In our meeting today, our various meetings that we had before the show, it occurred to me that I've never had a McRib.
What?
I know. I have.
You've never had a McRib?
I do not have disciplined eating habits. I happen to enjoy the McDonald's. I happen to love McDonald's French fries. I loved them before they took the beef tallow out, but that was, you know, for other reasons. Because it was screwing up vegetarians because they didn't realize that they're going, hey, I'm having French fries. That's
tasted
vegetarian.
Great, I'll
right.
tell you.
Turns out there was, you know.
There's a reason they tasted so great.
Exactly. Beef rendering in the oil. So there was that. So they 20 years ago they took that out, and it's never been quite the same. Still good though. Still better than competition. And I have a lot of other things I really love at McDonald's, but I've never ever had the McRib. It is back. We'll tell you the story about why they do what they do with the McRib.
Yeah, it's like, oh, it makes these like drop parachutes in, and then it's here for a little while, and everyone goes crazy, and then it goes away.
Right.
And then it comes back.
Right.
McDonald's also announcing they're bringing back the McCafe donut sticks. I've never had those before.
I didn't know those were once
didn't
a thing.
Didn't know those existed.
Right. Exactly. But this is the part of the story we're going to tell you. There's a Northwestern professor who was quoted in a big story about this today. And I would like to quote his work and make it my own because it's fascinating why they do what they did. It's possible they've never had those things before, and they're saying that they're returning them. It's more important that they return than they were ever there in the first place. That's the upshot of this story. So that's coming your way, too.
Okay.
All right? So we get that. All right. These are things. But before we get to these things, I would like to, right now, do a very, very unhappy victory dance. In advance of Ed Obradovich being here at 4:40 this afternoon.
Victory dance.
Also, like to point out that at 4:40 this afternoon, we'll also be giving away Hawks tickets, but it's a separate issue. It's a victory dance because I was right, and I'm unhappily right.
Well, you know, I did think about it. You mentioned that going... Are you talking about the travel?
Yeah, uh-huh.
The travel issue?
Yeah, uh-huh. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Just yeah. About everybody's talking about the travel issue now. Everybody's talking about the travel. Right. It's in every newspapers and the Raiders. I mean, I don't know. Kevin, you're probably
yeah,
going to say
not a big
deal.
I'll tell you guys why you're wrong. They lost because they were manhandled at the line of scrimmage. The offensive line's been atrocious and horrendous. They've got nothing going on. The ground game, 25 yards on 11 carries, had nothing to do when they landed in London. An embarrassing game from the Bears. The defensive line was manhandled by the Raiders. Matt Nagy was completely outcoached by John Gruden. They isolated Khalil Mack. He was mostly a non-factor, didn't have many impact plays. Again, had nothing to do when they landed in London. They were simply outplayed.
Kevin, unfortunately, is wrong. Because in my infinite wisdom, which is undying and without question, I will tell you that I have traveled
as
long
an NFL
distances.
Expert, as a well-known NFL expert, Rokan.
Yes, and as a very famed former NFL player, mm-hmm. I have traveled many a times overseas. Mm-hmm. And it takes me about a week to get used to being there, and just in time for me to come back home. But when you go to the East, it's harder than when you go to the West. Because the West, you just stay up later and you make it. But when you miss a day. So if you're missing a day and you're only going to give yourself 2 days to prepare and you're going to miss one of those days, that doesn't seem very smart to me. Okay. But that's just me.
That's why they lost.
I would say, let me just say they looked flat. The defense looked flat. Yes, Khalil Mack got isolated and Akeem Hicks got hurt early. Okay, fine. How? By the way, do we know anything about Akeem Hicks?
No.
No. Oh, God.
Oh, God. Oh, God.
He probably wouldn't have got hurt if they flew there earlier. That's for sure.
see,
Chase Daniels wouldn't have thrown that interception.
That's
if they got there earlier.
Well, he was tired, and he just decided. You know, when you get tired and you just like get snappy about things. Right?
Your vision starts to go a little bit. I'm pretty sure that
your
Raiders
memory?
Black really looked like our white.
Right. I'm saying, but you know, people get snappy. People get, you know, if you're sitting around and you're tired and you're not exactly sure why you're tired because you missed a day and you're not sure what's going on, your body clock's all screwed up, not eating the right food, it doesn't make any sense. And next thing you know, like, I'm just going to throw this ball. And that's what happened.
Okay, there it is, folks. That's why the Bears lost.
What I love is the
didn't help.
Raiders fans are so gracious in their victory. The way they're trolling everybody, even John Gruden. Like, oh, yeah, we don't have a disco, but let's all start dancing. He was, you know, talking about Club Dub and how that's a stupid idea.
What is a
mocking
Raiders?
It.
Wait a minute. Before they start trolling us, let me just troll them back, audio-wise, on the radio.
Yeah, sure.
Isn't even have a thing anymore.
Verbally.
Thank you. But I...
She's back.
The point, I think, that's quite clear here is that there's no such thing as a Raiders fan. Because they don't care about you Raiders fans. That's why they're leaving Oakland. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Well, they were even trolling poor Sophie Turner from Game of Thrones, saying the game had a better finish than Game of Thrones.
Oh,
because you remember she was
on
out there with her Bears like jersey on and yes, representing and put mm-hmm out that awesome video right before the game that even the Bears retweeted.
Sounds like
huge
Queen
fans
of the North, right?
That's great.
Queen of the NFC North.
Right. That's what she is. So that, and she, I got to say, it was good to see her in that.
It really was. And the crowd seemed to be, I don't know what you heard, Kev, but the crowd seemed to be on the Bears side.
Yeah, it was heavy Bears for sure.
Yeah. Well, let's face it. I mean, there's a lot of well-heeled people in this town that wanted to make that trip so they could tell all their other fancy neighbors and friends that they did it.
But
they brought their A game. They probably flew there earlier than the Bears. That's
I bet they did. I'll bet. In a lot of cases,
they looked well rested.
They did.
The fans, when they did the cutaways, very well rested.
Yeah. Peanut people. Tillman looked really good.
He did.
Yeah.
Eddie Johnson, the superintendent. Great.
Okay.
When did he leave?
Don't ask that question. That won't end well. So
not Friday.
Where's Lori Lightfoot on that? Is she'll be mad about that? Listen, it was really disappointing. The first half, they were sluggish. That's all. If they had not given up, right? I mean, we can all agree on this. If they had not given up 17 points in the first half, they would have won this game.
I know. If they didn't give up 24 points, they would have won this game.
I know, but 17 in the first half. But they wouldn't have given up 24 if they had not given up 17 in the first half.
If they would have scored more points, they would have won.
Yeah.
It's basic science, folks.
Okay. I'm just saying. Eddie Pinheiro looked good, though. I was very happy about
him. Did.
Eddie Money.
Poor guy's in pain. Just wincing
is
out
he?
There.
Oh.
You didn't see him make the kick, and he went down.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
God bless him. He's the only one right now.
Playing.
He's my only guy. Now, Khalil Mack, you just pointed out he got double-teamed quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
And so that was something Ed Obradovich last week said that they should start doing. Right? And they did. But that leaves somebody open, but it didn't seem to matter.
No, right? It didn't seem to matter.
They were
talking about how the Raiders met a week before the game in London, where they practiced a week before the game. When they got there, and they basically went through each defensive
it,
player.
She's trolling
well,
it.
Just in general,
yeah.
the way, the, right. And they went through each defensive player, and Mac obviously got a lot of attention because they felt that he was whipping up all the enthusiasm for the players, and they needed to shut him down.
Okay.
Well, with all that being said, still, John Gruden, thank you for Khalil Mack.
That's true. That's something we can all agree on. See, in these desperate times, we have to agree on one thing, and that would be one thing we can agree on.
The other
thing we should think about after the bye week here, they come back here, thank God, but I don't think it'll be a time change issue after 2 weeks, and they'll be home. But they take on one of the hotter teams in the NFC right now. Right? I mean, the Saints, everybody thought, oh, Drew Brees went down, that's it. Not the case. As a matter of fact, last night on the NBC show, they were all being asked, hey, what do you think of one of the hottest teams in the NFC? Who are the best teams in the NFC? And that the Saints were one of the teams mentioned. Not such an easy task. We'll see. This could be all it. This could be the season. The difference between 4-2 and 3-3 could make the difference, my friend, because it turns out Green Bay's really good. This sucks. Don't say anything, Kim, right now.
I'm not rubbing salt in anybody's wounds. Have you noticed I haven't said one word?
Wait, Kim.
Kim's
say
very
something
gracious.
About the news, which is coming up at the bottom of the hour. Then we'll talk to Ben Bradley in the WGN-TV newsroom. Ben Bradley joins us from the WGN-TV newsroom right now.
Hello, Ro. Good to be with you and Anna.
Thank you, Ben.
Hi, Ben.
No
Hi.
Need to lie.
I do it every day, just about 3:22. Great to be with you.
Oh,
just kidding.
So to be with us?
No,
kind
up.
Of okay to be with us?
Coming up.
The great Ron Majors once said that this time that he spends with Ro Khan is his favorite part of the day.
Yes.
Did he say that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm sure he would have said it about you, Anna, but it predated your arrival
days.
On scene.
Yeah, great. Yeah. He's come and checked in with us
yeah.
a bit. Yeah. In his retirement?
Yeah, that's what he said. It's not what Ben says. Coming up, I should mention, after 3:35, right at the end of the news, right, 3:35, 3:37, we're going to be talking to this green card veteran member who, this is an amazing story. I know that on Friday, I think, there was some discussion of this, and now
right.
This gentleman has been out telling his own story, Miguel Perez Jr.,
yes.
Who is, it's a fascinating story, and it's just one of those things when, you know, we talk about supporting our troops and supporting our veterans. I think this is a really good way to do it. If anybody's willing to come here and join the United States military and serve, especially in combat, and then gets done with their service and is told, no, you can't stay. That doesn't seem right.
And he was kicked out because of a previous conviction and then found himself kind of wandering through Tijuana, I believe he said, right?
It yeah.
is. I'll look forward to that interview.
It's an amazing story. An amazing story. So let's talk about what's going on in the news for you.
Yeah, so today at 4, we're going to break a story involving DCFS. I know you all are aware of the reporting we've done over the last many months about kids in DCFS care who, for a variety of reasons, find themselves forced to sleep on the floors of state offices. Governor Pritzker called it unacceptable over the summer. The acting director of DCFS also said it's unacceptable. Well, we've learned it continues to happen. In fact, Thursday night, a 10-year-old girl placed into DCFS custody. They had such trouble finding an appropriate shelter or place to put her that she was in their care through Saturday night at the DCFS office at 19th and Indiana in the South Loop, an office that is not equipped as an overnight shelter for kids. I got a tip about this Saturday morning from some folks who were very concerned that this kid was just going to be left there in the state offices, supervised, but in an inappropriate place for, you know, overnight stays through the entire weekend. And so I contacted the Cook County Public Guardian, who has been at the forefront of this issue, Charles Goldberg. He immediately started rattling cages at DCFS headquarters. And finally, at 8:30 Saturday night, this 10-year-old girl received a more appropriate placement. But, you know, despite you know, us doing these stories, we just showed on CLTV those pictures of little kids sleeping in the DCFS offices, despite the governor saying it's unacceptable. It's still happening.
You know, it's helpful that you shine a spotlight on these issues because it reveals something systemic. Because if there's nowhere to send this child, what about the next day and the next
right.
day? Is there a problem with the network of available foster homes? Are they not doing a good enough job? Do they not have enough families in their database? Did you get any sense of why this happened?
So experts say that over the years, the number of emergency shelter beds and placement opportunities has shrunk dramatically. Obviously, you had significant budget cuts under Governor Rauner. Governor Pritzker has said he is going to dramatically increase funding for DCFS, but we still haven't seen that play out in a way where no kid has to spend the night in a state office. And the fact that months ago they said it was unacceptable and still happening, and then further, and we'll get more into this at 4 o'clock, while the governor and the head of DCFS are saying it's unacceptable for a kid to spend the night at a state office, they went to court 2 weeks ago. DCFS went to court, a federal judge who oversees that agency, and DCFS filed an agreement, a stipulation that said, well, yes, our goal is never to have any kids spend the night at an office, but we would like the court's permission to, in extreme cases, have it happen and always no more than one night. So that's, you know, that's the state of affairs. Well, they say one thing publicly, they do another thing behind closed doors. Right. And let me be very clear, mm-hmm. some of these kids are very hard to place because of mental health issues, because of physical needs, et cetera. The folks at DCFS, you know, have a incredibly difficult, thankless job. The point of the public guardian, though, is that, you know, DCFS is kind of appears to be treating these as like a one-off. Well, maybe in an emergency they'll have to sleep in a state office. Well, maybe under this circumstance, maybe under that circumstance. But the reality is, you know, unfortunately, these situations repeat themselves over and over and over again. That's why you have emergency shelters and emergency placements and a place for kids to always go.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Well,
and by their very nature, I think the children that they are dealing with are have a lot more. They have more mental health
emotional
issues.
Needs,
they have emotional
correct.
Needs. They have things that they've been through that no child should be mm-hmm. ever be through going
right.
through. And so that seems that you would necessarily need that network of people ready to handle those type of children.
Yep.
All right. So that comes up at 4 o'clock?
4 o'clock and 9 o'clock tonight.
All right. Ben, you need to be the deciding vote in this.
Yes, sir.
Do you believe that the Bears lost that game because they went into London too late?
No. I think, as Matt Nagy indicated,
he
was
going to
have them wear compression socks on the plane,
right?
Which clearly didn't compress them enough.
Should they
because they didn't get their legs until the second half.
Well, was it a factor? Tell Roe it was a factor. Was it or not a factor?
Whatever you want me to say, I will say.
I think you should tell me.
I agree with Anna 100%.
We need you, Ben.
Kevin,
I think you're
getting a win out of that.
Roe's celebrating a loss today.
That team had a lot of other issues beyond jet lag.
Well,
Roe's like, I told you so. That's how we started the show today, Ben. Yeah. It was wonderful for all of us.
Yeah. A little na-na-na poo-poo. It's a great way to start a broadcast.
I'm just taking an unhappy victory lap is what I said.
Yeah. I can't wait for Roe to get the head coaching job. It's going to be great. We're going to be missing John Fox big time.
Hey, that's unfair. All right. Well, we wish everybody the best of luck. I don't know who these people are, but that's all I can say. Ben, did I mention that coming up after 4:40 I got Hawks tickets? Did I mention that to you?
No. What's the number? I'll call in.
I can't tell you now.
And you can't
win. I've got a phone up to my ear from 1982 right now. I'm ready to go.
Right. God knows what's on it.
Yeah.
All right. Still has Bozo's makeup on it. Goodbye. Thank you, Ben. All right. We have coming up on the other side a very interesting story about a deported Army veteran, why he was deported, and how he found his way back. Roe Khan Show with Anna DeVlantis right here on 720 WGN. All right, here's an interesting Chicago story. There's a man named Miguel Perez Jr. You might have seen the story on Friday. He was sworn in as a U.S. citizen. He served two tours in Afghanistan, but he was not a U.S. citizen. And then after returning from his two tours in Afghanistan and being diagnosed with PTSD, amongst other issues, he ended up finding himself in a world of drugs and a world of crime and got sentenced to prison. Upon coming out, was told he had to leave the country, even though he had served two tours, much to his detriment physically and emotionally, and had to leave the country and he's got an amazing story. He's here in the studio with us. I'll let him tell the story. But let's just fast forward to last Friday. You were sworn in as a United States citizen after this incredible journey, which we'll get to. Your emotions about that?
I'm just shocked. I'm surprised. You know, it's been a long time coming. And it shouldn't have happened in the first place. You know, I shouldn't have been involved in this situation. And none of the other deported veterans should be involved in this situation. But unfortunately, there's flaws in our system. And that's where I fell through. But now I'm just so happy to be home.
Where were you when they came to you and said, hi, we're going to deport you? And how did that hit you?
Well, I first found out when I was still in prison that I have a that I had an ICE detention, but I didn't believe it was going to go through. I just thought that it was a mistake.
And what year would that have been?
That was the end of 2015, early 2016.
Okay.
That's when I first got the notice that that I had an order of deportation. And that once I was released from prison, that I would be going to a detention center and then going to be deported, which I thought that it was a mistake or...
And let's begin at the beginning then. Okay. So you were born in Mexico. You were brought here by your parents.
That is correct.
How old were you when you came here?
I was 7 years old, between 7 and 8.
Okay, so you'd have been 7 year old coming to Chicago.
That is correct.
Were your parents legal immigrants or illegal immigrants?
Legal immigrants. What
legal.
Yes. To backtrack a little bit, my grandfather is a natural born citizen of the United States.
Oh.
And so is his father and the whole family before that. They're from Pueblo, Colorado. My grandfather moved to Mexico when he was in his teens or, you know, early 20s, mm-hmm. and he decided to stay in Mexico and start a family. My father was born in Mexico, then I was born in Mexico. And even as a child, we used to come to the United States legally with a visa due to my grandfather being a natural born citizen. So we would come to California, Disneyland, we'll come to visit all the time, so it was just yeah. normal for us to come in and out.
So you're 7 years old, you come and you move to Chicago. Where'd you live in the Chicago area?
Not too far from here, 1212 West Huron.
Okay.
Just down the street.
All right. So that's now Ukrainian Village or East Village or whatever they call that now, right?
That is correct.
So the so you grew up there. You go to high school here?
Yes. I went to grammar school, Philo Carpenter, and then Carl Schurz High School in Milwaukee, Addison.
Okay. So you you joined the military at what age?
At 22.
22. And did you go to college or junior college or anything like that before you joined?
Yes, I did two years of college.
Okay. So you get in the military right after 9/11, right?
Actually, I joined April 2011, and I graduated AIT on 9/11.
Oh, okay. So I knew there was a 9/11 connection here. So you do two tours in Afghanistan.
That is correct.
As in regular army or in guard?
A regular army. Okay. I was actually attached. I was in a special forces unit.
And how long were you there, Miguel?
In Afghanistan?
Mm-hmm.
It was 6 months tours.
Okay.
So it was right at the invasion, right? So by March, April of 2002, I was in Afghanistan till the end of October. And then I went back in late March, early April of 2003 and came back like October
okay.
of 2003.
All right. And so you get out, you're diagnosed with PTSD.
That is correct.
And at what point did things start to go wrong for you in civilian life?
Well, at first I didn't notice the symptoms. I thought it was just normal. And I did seek help at the VA. But at that time, we did not have the resources that we have now. I started going to Heinz Hospital in
Maywood.
In Maywood. And they would give me the runaround, like come back in 3 weeks, or they give me different appointments. Mm. And I started self-medicating. I started with alcohol, and then eventually with other drugs. My case was powdered cocaine.
Okay.
Hmm.
And what were you doing to support yourself at the time?
I was working. I had different jobs.
Okay. And then once you got out of once this deepened for you, what was the criminal act? What got you in trouble?
The criminal act was that I was with a friend, which was, he sold drugs at the time. And at that day, it so happened that he had been under investigation for like 9 months. And the day that they went to arrest him, I was with him. And I got out the car and made the drop because the situation that it was, I was in a hurry and I was like, just give it to me. I'll go drop it off. And we can take off.
And it was powder cocaine?
It was powder cocaine.
Okay.
So some say that I might have been used as a mule, if you may say, because I was not a drug dealer myself.
What were you charged with then?
I was charged with delivery and mm-hmm. manufacture, because in the state of Illinois, when you put drugs in a bag, that is considered a manufacture. So when the news comes out that I'm being charged with delivery and manufacture, it gave the impression that I was making drugs mm-hmm. or that it was something like
this
that.
So something you're doing regularly.
Right.
And you were not. But you spent how long in prison?
They gave me a 15-year sentence. And in the state of Illinois, it went day by day. So I ended up doing 7.5 years, which was a lot of time for that particular crime. Because my co-defendant, he bonded out and fled to Mexico. So I guess I ended up.
But you were from, you'd served in the United States Army, and you were from here, and your family was here.
Correct.
Right, so you did not flee.
Of course.
Did you ever think about fleeing?
Not at all. Not at all. I never mentioned to the judge or anybody that I was in the military, so I did not use that as an excuse. If anything, once everything came down to pleading guilty, mm-hmm. I went in front of the judge and pled guilty.
So you took responsibility for this?
Absolutely.
And they gave you a 15-year sentence?
Correct.
Okay.
Which,
and did you have priors?
No priors.
So you had military service. Did you have a public defender?
No, it was a paid lawyer. Huh. And he told me that it was going to be 15 years, 7.5, but that I qualify for a school good time. So he made it seem like I was going to serve 2.5 years. So that's why I went in front of the judge and pled guilty.
And that was not the case?
That was not the case. Once I got to prison and found out that I had to do, at first they told me that my out date was 2020, so I still would have been in prison. But I reached out to the judge and to different lawyers, and they finally corrected the paperwork. Mm-hmm. And the attorney...
What was your final? How much time do you eventually serve total?
7.5
seven
in prison.
And a half total.
Plus 1.5 years in a detention center.
So in your 7.5 years, though, you served a long time. So you probably thought, hey, I'm going to go back and see my family. I've served my time. And it didn't occur to you that this deportation was going to be real.
Oh, of course not. I did not think about anything that had to do with deportation. And the time in prison was actually a good thing for me because I got help with the PTSD and mm-hmm. with other physical things that I had going on. I was seeing a psychiatrist once a month, psychologist twice a month, group meetings, and I was working in the school building helping other inmates getting their GED, and eventually moved to the college part where I was helping them get their associate's degree.
So where did you serve?
Most of the time was in Galesburg, Henry Hill Correctional Center.
Okay. So you get out, you're immediately deported, or you're immediately taken to the detention center.
Yes, the day that I was supposed to get out was September 23rd, 2016, and they have a time to pick me up. So even the warden and everybody at the correctional center where they told me, well, if they don't show up by 11, you go home. But ICE was there at the door before I even made it to the door.
All right, and so then how long you were in the detention center for?
A year and a half.
A year and a half. And what was that experience like?
That experience is worse than prison because they violate all kinds of human rights, any type of rights, and they put you with, although I was just facing an immigration issue, mm-hmm. I was put in with federal inmates and state inmates, so they put you all together. I was there with a 16-year-old boy. I was in Kenosha, Wisconsin, the detention center, mm-hmm. and I was there with a 16-year-old that was facing murder charges. I was there with somebody that had already been found guilty of sexual misconduct and all kinds of things like that, but just was waiting sentencing, and they put us all together. So you have people with...
These are people who were going to stay in the United States in
yes.
prison.
Yes.
But you are awaiting deportation to Mexico.
Correct.
Okay. We're going to pick up the story on the other side here because I'm interested in what the end of that experience was like in the detention center. Then what happened in the meantime when you were in Mexico and how you got back here. We're talking to Miguel Perez Jr., who is a part of an organization called Green Card Veterans. And your story is not all that unique, right? I mean, there are hundreds, if not thousands, of people in a similar situation to you that are technically foreign nationals, even though they probably grew up in the United States, joined the military hoping to get in. President Bush initially signed a law that expedited situations like this without the criminal part, but expedited citizenship for people who served, especially in the aftermath of 2001, right? But this case has all these tricky elements to it, and it's very, very similar. We'll find out how it resolves. We're talking to Miguel Perez Jr., who is now a United States citizen after quite an odyssey. He was born in Mexico to an American grandfather and Mexican father, right? But you had travel rights to the United States. How old are you now?
I'm 41 now.
41. And served in Afghanistan, two tours of duty, 2 6-month tours of duty in combat in Afghanistan in the aftermath of 2002 and 2003, right?
That's correct.
And came back to Chicago was, had you applied for citizenship at that point when you came back?
No. No,
did
I didn't.
You even think to?
I did not think about it. None of us did, really. The ones that I served with that were not born in the States, we didn't think about it. And plus, like you mentioned earlier about George Bush signing the executive order, it was implied that it was automatic citizenship.
So you, that's what you assumed?
Yes.
Okay.
You would be considered one of the dreamers, too, wouldn't you? I mean, in terms of that legislation that keeps getting stalled, it's going nowhere. Right now, I think the House passed it. They're waiting on the Senate, but it seems to be...
No, I think the dreamers wouldn't... were never legal permanent residents.
And you were?
I was.
Got it. Okay.
So you get back, you get into trouble. You end up, because of your PTSD, you end up in the world of drugs. You end up then becoming a drug mule. You get convicted of that. You plead guilty, actually, to it after you got arrested. You do 7.5 years in prison.
Correct.
Then you're immediately deported to a detention camp in Wisconsin.
That is correct.
To await your eventually deportation. Why did it take 1.5 years to deport you?
Because the legal team and all the advocates, we were fighting for it, and there was different... There was different options that we had, but all of them went dead end. And actually, the deportation could have been stopped because Senator Tammy Duckworth introduced a private bill to stop my deportation. However, for that private bill to work, it would have been it would have had to been signed by one of the other senators in the committee, which in this case would have been Grassley from Iowa. Mm-hmm. And Conley from Texas. Both of them implied that they were going to.
But they did not.
But they did not.
Didn't act on it.
And then also we applied for a pardon from then Governor Bruce Rauner. Mm-hmm. And it passed unanimous with the council.
You'd already served your time, so yes. It wasn't like they'd let you out. Yeah.
But when he got to his desk, he also implied that he was going to approve it, and he denied the pardon.
When you were appealing it, though, with your lawyers through the immigration court, did they say you're a veteran at that point? Was that brought up?
Yes. What we were also applying for was retroactive citizenship to when I served in the military.
Got it.
So you get deported. You end up in Tijuana?
Yes, in Tijuana.
How did they get you to Tijuana?
Actually, first they flew me to Texas, and they sent me to Tamaulipas, which at the time... was on the do not travel. It was on the ban
right. For
Americans not to travel. And they knew that I had some sort of death threats and because of the military service and then the drug charge and everything. That was one of the places that I should have not been. And that's where they went ahead and
this is a lot of people. Actually, they still send people there. There's still a deportation center. And that's one of the most blizzarding, they say, for people who are going through this process because they land and there really are no support services on the other side of the border for that.
Absolutely not.
Right. How'd you make your way to Tijuana?
Friends and family, they came to the rescue 2-3 days after I was there, and we moved to Tijuana because it was still by the border, and we were still fighting to see if I was going to be able to...
Did you take anybody with you?
No, just we asked the team, like my advocates, Green Card Veterans, LULAC, Pastor Emma Lozano.
And what were you doing in Tijuana while you were there?
Well, I was there. I worked as an interpreter for a while with lawyers that, you know, the asylum seekers that came in the caravan. I was translating for them. Or not only that, other lawyers, because there's people that work in the United States, but live in Tijuana, so they travel back and forward. And I met a couple lawyers, and I did translation.
How long were you in Tijuana?
1.5 years.
Wow. And then, you had the support of Tammy Duckworth.
Yes, correct.
And some other members of Congress, and so by doing that, they got your attention. You came to their attention, and. Given your story, given the dynamics of your story and the fact that you took responsibility for what you did wrong, and you also took responsibility for joining the United States Army at war, right? Because of your devotion to the United States, not to Mexico.
That is correct.
They found a way to get you this, to get you here to citizenship. Do you have to be pardoned for this, or this is just a...
Yes, because the crime was a state, it was a state crime. So Governor Pritzker, he... granted me the pardon about a month and a half ago, and then USCIS called me for a meeting, but they wouldn't let me in through the Border Patrol because they don't coordinate with each other. The agencies don't coordinate with each other, so I wasn't able to come to the first interview, but this last interview that was last Wednesday, they let me come for that.
And then you became a citizen on Friday. What does it mean to you, Miguel Perez Jr., to be an American?
Well, with the certificate, it's only a piece of paper. Now, it's against the law to claim to be a citizen when you're not. So I never claimed to be a citizen, but I've always claimed to be an American because it's in my heart. That's the only reason that I joined the military, because I love the country. I didn't join for the college money or to travel or anything else that that the recruiter tells you. No, I joined because on my father's side of the family, there are Korean War veterans, Vietnam veterans, World War II veterans. So it was just something that I felt that every American should join, even if it's the reserves. It's just not that I was expecting to go to war, but just in case anything happens, that I'm ready to defend my country, my land.
I don't care what you think about immigration. It just feels as if, I think a number of people are shocked to hear your story, because I think when you serve two tours of duty for Afghanistan, in Afghanistan, for our country, this country we all love, and you sacrifice your life for our flag, it feels as if deportation would be out of the question at that point. And yet, you're here to tell us you're not alone. There are so many others who fall in that category that you're now fighting to help bring to the awareness around that as well.
Yes, due to my deportation, that's when I came across other deported veterans in Mexico and even in Kenya, Nigeria, Belize, Haiti, Costa Rica. They're everywhere. And according to the GAO report that just came out a few months ago, ICE and USCIS does not keep track of how many veterans they deport. However, they identified 100, and out of those 100 that they identified, I was one of those that they identified that they missed protocol as far as finding out about their service and other issues that could have prevented the deportation.
Hmm. Miguel Perez Jr., congratulations on being a United States citizen and taking responsibility not only for the United States, but taking responsibility for your non-violent drug offense, which, of course, you know, now they're letting a lot of people out, you know, the criminal justice reform and all that. Thank you so much for being here. We really appreciate it.
And thanks for your service, too.
Girl, you deserve the best in life. So tonight I'm going to treat you right. Girl, I hope you have an appetite. Because we're going to McDonald's.
Oh, man.
I'm hungry.
Do you remember this song?
Mm-hmm. Sure do.
Dude and M. The Cook County taxpayers paid $24,900 for that song.
And the reason it was $24,900 was because it was one of those contracts, the 24-9s. Anything under 25, they had special abilities to just sign off it without other people getting to know.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And they were supposed to go out and hand out leaflets or something like that. I remember that was the thing. That was a Fox News investigation here. That was
Jane Blacko, right?
Pretty great investigation into Dude and M. And but I kind of like that song. You know, they were aspiring, musicians, jingle writers. I was surprised,
that's a good
actually. Song. McDonald's didn't pick that up. We're going to McDonald's. That's how you know. All right, so story today I found very interesting about, you know, the McRib is back, and
woo-hoo!
That's apparently a big deal.
The internet's on fire.
And a Northwestern economics professor, marketing professor, I should say, took a look at this and took a look at what the whole hysteria about this is and why it is that people go, I guess, pig bleep over this. I would say ape, but this is really pork. Is this pork? I don't even know if this is pork.
We would like to believe it's pork.
It is a white meat, just looking at it.
Yes. Now we.
Do you have one there, Kim?
I have one sitting here.
Yeah. Now, I have not. And when I was reading the story, I thought to myself, I like McDonald's a lot. I go there, you know, maybe once a month, once every other month, something like that. The quarter pound of cheese is my jam. I don't know why it is, but it is. Just that's what I feel very confident if I'm particularly hungover, the double quarter pounder with cheese. Fries, great. Like the iced
great
tea.
Great breakfast.
Unsweetened. Yeah, and the breakfast, the sausage McMuffin.
Yeah.
Sausage muffin without egg.
For a buck.
Yeah, that's me. That's me, right? That's it. I would eat that every meal of the day. I'd be dead
by
the time.
I like breakfast burritos. Those are good.
See, that's McDonald's amazing. And Chicago's very own, right? I mean, this is the best. However, I have never in whatever this is, it's 30 years or something now of this, I have never had a McRib, and I've never understood. And it was like, you have to get there in the right time, and it goes against my principle of being told what to do by the restaurant I'm paying money to go eat at. So I just have never done it. But then I realized by reading the story that they're not the only ones who do this. This is it's enforced scarcity is what they're doing. They're creating scarcity in their marketplace by saying, hey, it's only available now if you don't come get it, because they could do this all the time. And the people go, why don't you do it all the time? According to this Northwestern professor, that Alexander Chernev, professor of marketing at Northwestern University, Kellogg School of Management. There you go. I want to give him credit for this.
Go Cats.
It's all by design, he said. He said, when you have these exclusive products, which exist for a short period of time, it gives people a reason to come to the store who might not be in rotation to do it. Right? Like, oh, McRib is back. I got to go.
So you you break from your other routine of going to the other places, and you go there. I get it.
Starbucks, they do that with the pumpkin spice crap that they put out.
Or just any seasonal drink. Because in the winter, they have, like, their peppermint, right?
Yeah, like a Christmassy type drink.
Yep.
Or holiday.
And then, what's it, like, right after the first of the year, they have those things that are, like, just nothing but foam and sugar, right? What are those things that are funny colors?
Oh, the unicorn thing.
Yeah.
Oh, gosh. The really colorful things.
We did that experiment, too. You guys made me drink that.
It was so sweet.
Really bad.
Sick for a week.
Really bad.
You have to be a 7-year-old in order to drink those. Under 10, for sure.
Dunkin' Donuts also has its own pumpkin-flavored treats in August that they start to throw out.
I'm a Dunkin' man. Whole country runs on it.
The Coca-Cola Christmas trucks and turkey sandwiches from Subway. Don't they always have turkey sandwiches?
Yeah, what?
Yeah, that's weird.
What's that?
That's always.
This just in at Subway. It's turkey sandwich.
And coming soon, ham sandwiches.
Wait a minute. Never before seen.
Never before seen. Behold, the ham sandwich.
They got a lot of publicity after the Juicy Smollett, Jesse Smollett thing with the tuna sandwich. So they got a little pub on that.
Yeah. All right, so now, right, exactly.
Limited time, the Juicy Smollett.
Right, it's
that's
a 6-inch.
That's what they should call it.
Right, the 6-inch. Because, you know, he's got to keep weight. That's the most important thing.
Right.
We tell you it's a tuna sandwich, but when you get it, there's no tuna on the bun.
But we also learned that it keeps really well for a long time. Because he still had it when the cops were there hours later.
Right, it's not like those sandwiches that fall apart on you, obviously, because you can get beaten up on the streets and still hang on to it and have a full sandwich at the end of it.
It looked like straight out of a commercial. See, officer, it clearly is a tuna sandwich.
Noose sold separately. All right, so here you go. So this is the deal. It's just designed to get us to go in and buy other stuff, to interrupt our routine. And I've always wondered, what is the big deal? Is there a big deal with this? Like, now, Kevin said during the commercial break, he was like, hey, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but you're not a fan.
Well, I used to go nuts for it at a different time in my life.
When you were 10.
Like high school days. Yeah, I think the last time I've had one was in college at some point. So I'm actually kind of intrigued because producer Brian walked in with about 20 of them in this massive bag. He's like, we're doing McRibs today. I'm like, whoa, Nelly. Okay, haven't had one in a while. Let's see how they've held up. They've been around since 1981, by the way.
They do a limited release like every year since then. All of a sudden, they're available, and then they're not. I guess it sounds like that theory totally works for me because the one thing I love and crave at McDonald's is the Filet-O-Fish. I know that's weird, but that's the sandwich I like. If it was only available twice a year, I'd totally race in to go get it.
That's a thing, the Filet-O-Fish. That's like you're
so
a certain
good. The
archetype.
Sauce is so good.
That loves that. There's like an entire there are people that would not do anything else at McDonald's except for Filet-O-Fish.
I'm with Anna.
You like the Filet-O-Fish?
I'm a fan of the Filet-O-Fish.
Yeah. It tastes so
good. I would be so worried about fast food fish.
Well,
you get over it.
I've survived it, but it's pretty crazy that it's basically the fish, a slice of cheese, and their special sauce, and it somehow works. I don't know how.
Special sauce makes everything. Does.
Right, that's true.
It's a but it's like a fish stick, right? I mean, it's a processed, you know,
fish. Like a white fish.
Well, yeah, it's a square patty,
right? But it's a thing.
It says it's a fish, white fish from the Atlantic or something.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it says
on
the
package. I can't eat those after being forced to eat that at like for a school lunch. I can't look at it anymore.
Kim Scarch is like, why'd you bring up the Filet-O-Fish? Oh, no.
Because there used to be like that silver stuff inside on the fish.
Oh, yeah.
What are you talking about?
Sorry. All right, I just took a bite of this.
Okay.
Initial thoughts?
The McRib sandwich.
First time ever.
First tasting.
For Rokan.
Yeah.
Yes.
I mean,
it smells like anything else from McDonald's.
No, it's nothing like anything. Because you don't really get barbecue stuff at McDonald's, you know?
And it's a smoky, it's a sauce that is both spicy and indifferent all at the same time.
Indifferent?
Yes. It's sort of got that, it's like there's like a smokiness to it. and a little bit of spice, like a little tang, I would say, not like hot spice, but like tang. And then all of a sudden, by the time it gets to the back of your mouth, it's gone. I don't know how the McDonald's engineers did this, but they did it. It's almost like they're, okay, we're going to give you a sense that you're going to taste something, and then we're going to steal it from you after you swallow.
Well, I think part of the problem is the bread to meat ratio is a bit off. I always feel like there's way too much bread in the bite.
Good point. Because it's not the same as a McDonald's bun, exactly. Should, you know who we need on this?
Who?
We need Willie Wilson to explain the McRib to us.
Oh, my God.
Because, you know, he was a McDonald's owner-operator for years, and he understands all of these tricks that they use.
He does. He says the pancakes are his favorite. That's what he loves. When he's come on the show before, having sampled everything.
Oh, yeah. Pancakes may be the best.
They're pretty good.
Pancakes in America. Hold on. Let me take one more bite, and then I'm going to see if I can confirm.
I like
cover
to go biscuit at McDonald's.
They're breakfast. I'm a fan. I don't eat really fast food anymore, but the one thing I still do get is McDonald's breakfast. I'm a fan. A little Egg McMuffin and a coffee.
Why are you not doing the fast food anymore?
Oh, I haven't eaten fast food in a long time.
Oh, yeah, like 3 seconds ago.
Until now.
Why are you judging him for that?
I know.
Like, what are you doing not eating fast food? And you call yourself an American.
You're not stuffing your face with Big Macs and chalupas? How dare you? Oh, I don't know. I used to eat it like 4 times a week, and one day I'd be like, I don't think this is a good idea.
This is not interrupting your schedule for.
No, that's fine.
No?
No,
I don't. You're not going to go racing in there to get it?
No.
See, mine didn't come with enough sauce today. Normally they have like almost too much sauce. Mine's lacking sauce today.
I got oversauced over here.
Really?
Over by here, yeah. Steve, the sign guy, sent this to us. But should I eat that? Okay.
Really?
So that was pretty.
So if you could give it a grade or like a scale of 10, maybe like a 4-star.
Okay,
situation.
if I'm gonna do stars, I'm gonna give the sausage McMuffin or the sausage, yeah, I guess the sausage McMuffin, no egg. I give that 4 stars.
Okay,
one of the finest breakfast items of all times.
Mm-hmm.
With the egg, I'm gonna give it 3.5 stars. Too much egg ratio, too high. The hash browns, I'm going to give 3.5 stars. The french fries, I'm going to give 4 stars. The quarter pounder with cheese, your standard quarter pounder with cheese, don't mess with it, 4 stars. This, I'm going to give a middling 2.5 stars. No, you know what?
You're not a fan.
No. I'm going to 2 stars.
Two?
Yeah.
Usually the sauces make up for everything on the McDonald's.
Right.
Right? On the
pour enough
sandwiches
sauce over
in general.
That's all you can taste.
They totally work. But let me ask you this, Ro. In terms of fast food rib sandwiches, where would you put that? Because I think that it's really hard to actually get a boneless rib sandwich.
That's, right. That was the point of this, was when they did it, almost 40 years ago now, 38 years ago, when they did this, the whole idea originally was they were going to do, it would be the first boneless pork rib sandwich. And they pulled it off, and nobody, and actually in the industry, there was a lot of question about how they did it. How were they able to get the pork to stay together like that?
Mm-hmm. So do we want to know the answer? Do we know the answer?
No,
we don't. Mm-mm. Okay.
No. You could go watch The Founder or something like that. Maybe they explained it in that. I don't know. Yeah, not too much. And you don't want to watch any of that stuff with Morgan Spurlock either and have him explain it. Ah, forget about it. All right. All right, there you have it. Well,
so you're going to finish it, or is it not even good enough to really? You just
we're working.
I'm just wondering. You can put it on the side. It'll keep
solely and completely for work. It's a Chicago company. It's McDonald's. And I've never done it before. And I thought, well, why not? Because this is a fascinating story though about why it is. Because that's a really common question for all these things that are big hot sellers. Well, why don't they sell them all year round? Well, the whole thing is a trick to get you to come back. It has nothing to do with whether or not they can do a process line for it. They can absolutely do it.
Classic marketing maneuver.
I think it totally works. We have listeners says, what about the Shamrock Shake? That's another thing that you go back for. You're like, I've been drinking these since I was a kid. I
1.5 stars for that.
No, get
what?
Out.
One and a half stars.
No, those are good.
I don't do the mint stuff either.
What?
Right?
No.
The
Shamrock Shake, when it first came out in the 1970s, all it was the vanilla shake with green dye in it. That was it. And that was fine. Because you had an anticipation it was going to be minty, but it wasn't, and that made you happy. Now that it's got the little bit of mint in it, it tastes like
toothpaste.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, no.
I'm not a mint dessert guy. It doesn't work for me.
But mint.
McDonald's just straight-up milkshakes are wildly underrated.
Correct.
Because half their machines are never working.
That's true. That's the McFlurry machine that's always broken.
It's true. More so the McFlurry machine. I think that's also just a big lie.
Yeah. All right, well, there you have it.
Well, that was an exciting moment in broadcasting history. Ro Khan, McRib.
First McRib for Ro.
Thank you very much. Things coming up. Need your attention. And Obradovich is going to be here.
Right.
We actually have a piece of tape from the Hampel Be With Kaz show yesterday.
It was so good.
That actually changes my position on who's crazier on that show. Forever, I knew it to be Ed Obradovich. Dan Hampton may be actually more combustible than Ed Obradovich. I didn't think I could ever say it. I didn't think it was ever even possible.
He was upset is an understatement. He was infuriated by what he saw out there in London on that field.
Thank God for that radio show, though, because I went out to watch the game yesterday with some friends, and I was driving home, and I was like, oh, my God. And I turned it on. I was like, oh, my God. Oh, my God. It so, made me feel so much better. They represented all of my angst.
They did, me too. And then by the end, his final comment, OB, was, cross your fingers, Chicago. Maybe one day we'll have a big-time football team. And I thought, oh, my gosh. And then they went off the air. And I just thought, wow.
Coming up, Blackhawks tickets were given away for the Columbus game. Coming up just a few minutes. Stay right here. News in two.
They have been an embarrassment today. They got their ass handed to them from the opening kickoff. And I'm telling you this, Chase Daniel, you can't expect a quarterback to be error-free when he's got people in his face. You know how many times Derek Carr got hit today? You know how many times our great defensive line hit him? One time! OB got closer to him from the guy from our studio. I'm telling you, this is a debacle, and you hang it right on Matt Nagy's behind.
That's hard to do.
I never thought that I would find somebody who had a shorter fuse than Ed Obradovich. And I say that with all due love and respect, OB. I do. I love the shortness of your fuse.
You know, Dan, I tell you what, he really let it go. And actually what I was going to say when he was finished done doing that, I was going to say, well, folks, that's our show for today. Thank you. See you next week.
Right. What do you need the next 2 hours and 49 minutes for? The thing that, and I was just saying this, what is always amazing to me is when I, after a Bears loss, there's no tonic. Well, other than with gin, there's no tonic that is better for me than the Hamp OB with Kaz show, because you reflect everything that I was so angst-ridden about. And quite honestly, I was sitting with some folks last night, and one of them knows you, and you know the family out in the western suburbs, OB. And the guy said to me, turns to me, and goes, I can't wait to listen to what OB has to say about this, because it is exactly what we were talking about. Now, before we get started with your exact thoughts on this, Kevin is mad at me, and I understand why Kevin's mad at me, because I was taking a victory lap.
He was trying to rub it in our face.
No, I was not.
Right off the top of the show.
They should have gone into London earlier, though. That's all I'm going to say about it. I'm going to be done with it, and now it's your turn.
Well, let me say this. You know, all that timing with London, they've been doing this for many years now, and people have been leaving, you know, Thursday, Wednesday, Friday, whatever have you. When it comes right down to it, there was time for them. There was time for an adjustment and to get ready to play. I mean, to try to pin that on that they left Thursday night and got there Friday morning, that's beyond laughable. The first thing I said yesterday, and the first what I saw for four quarters, you know, like where was this game won and lost at? You know, was it game planning? You know, was it offense's fault, defense? Was it special teams that blew up? It was right up front, and more often than not, the game is won up front. Our offensive line got their backsides handed to them, and our defensive line got blown up all four quarters. They got pushed around, shoved around. I mean, it was incredible. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And remember when I talked about the 85 Bears? They never even got back after winning the Super Bowl. They didn't get back to the Super Bowl to win or lose it. And the point at the 100th anniversary that I was trying to make to these young kids is, you guys had a chance last year. It was right in front of you. There is no guarantee that that you're going to come back in 2019 or 2020 and gain or be greater than you were before. There are no guarantees in this game. Our record now is 3-2. We don't play for 2 weeks. We've got who we got coming in here to play?
Saints.
New Orleans.
Yeah.
New Orleans ended up coming in with a backup quarterback. This should have been a win yesterday, and that should be a win against New Orleans. But I'm telling you, there's some real dark clouds heading our way. And we better grow up. Now, to this coach we have, Nagy. When, Nagy, are you going to let these kids on offense play a real game of football? We've got receivers that can get separation, move the quarterbacks out of the pocket. They're getting killed in there. I don't understand, Roe. I sit there, I get infuriated. How dumb is dumb?
Pretty dumb.
We don't do anything. We don't use the entire field. We don't use the rules that are given to us on offense. Watch again. I can't say it enough. Watch the other teams. What are they doing? Throwing the ball down the field. The other two kids that came in the same class as Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, he threw for 426 yards yesterday, 426 and 5 touchdowns. I'm tired of talking about Patrick Mahomes. All you see are people throwing the football down the field. The highlights, bam, 30 yards, 40 yards. Watch us. Dink and dunk, dink and dunk, dink and dunk, and hope and pray to God that our defense doesn't falter and they get a fumble and run it back for 6. That's basically what we've seen. And I'm telling you what, it falls right on Nagy's head. I don't know who else you could call, who else you could blame, but my God, and I'm going to say it again here, Nagy, let these kids play football.
Okay, OB, I want you to sit down, and I want you to immediately just take a deep breath. But I agree with you 100%, but I think you also might have helped the game plan for the Raiders. I don't know if Chucky was actually listening to us or tapes of the show, but one of the things that you said that an opposing offensive line could do to stop Khalil Mack is pop off the line at him. Not take 2 steps back in pass protection, but actually go try and knock him off his game and edge him. And I watched for that yesterday, and I saw it a number of times, and they seem to have, I hate to say it, Khalil Mack, as much as we love him, they seem to have his number because they needed to neutralize him because of all the controversy.
There's absolutely no question about it. And because, you know, and not to talk about last week, but that is a fact. When you got somebody that is quick and he has that ability to swoop with his shoulder and to stay low and come around, he's got great quickness. He really does. Kid is a hell of a football player. But there are ways to neutralize that. And the last thing you want to do is give ground and let him get a step or two underneath him. He can do anything after that. Instead, fire out, catch him at the line of scrimmage, and make him play football. And that's what happened yesterday. But I'm going to tell you what. You go up and down our defensive line, our linebackers, our front seven is terrific. And they make it easy for our defensive backs. They really do. That's the power of our defense, is the front seven. Boy, I'll tell you what. You want to talk about missing in action? Wow. They got their backsides handed to them big time.
OB, last week everybody was in love with Chase Daniel. They thought maybe he was the favorite, some people did, over Mitch Trubisky. I'm just saying that was being said. Now, not so much. I guess I wonder how much of this is quarterback, how much of this is the offense overall, and how much of this is coaching when you look at just the offensive side of things for the Bears?
Well, Anna, if we'd have won the game, if they could have pulled it out, you know, we'd be saying, hey, Chase Daniels is pretty good, you know. He's whatever have you. But I'll tell you what, on a couple of routes that he was thrown, this young kid we got, Miller, he's, I don't know what the hell route he's running, but it was definitely the wrong routes. I don't know what that kid was thinking about. And then when he got the touchdown,
mm-hmm.
and he's doing all, running around doing all that celebrating, that cost us 15 yards. That pretty much cost us a whole big lot, maybe even the game. You know, you got to understand where you're at and what you're doing. And I'm going to tell you something. The fifth game in the league, and you don't know where the hell a route is. You don't know where you're supposed to run.
Opie, you mentioned the Lions' poor play, and it's really been like that all season through five games. The running game's non-existent. Do you think they should make changes there, whether it's moving guys around on the line or even benching some of them?
No, challenge them. I think those guys, they're not ready for the pasture yet. I don't think so. I think there's some of those guys, they get together, they can play some pretty good football. But, you know, when there's a challenge, you know, you play to win every game and you play to be a world champion. And if you don't understand that as an owner, as coaches, as the front office, as players, then get the hell out of this town. Get out of this town. I'm tired of it. Well, excuse. Well, we got there too late. No, they got there too early. Well, it was this. It was the weather. No, some Trubisky got hurt. No, he threw this, he that. No, it's enough with the excuses. We've got a team right now that if we can utilize the field, and this to me is not a mystery, folks. I just watch us dink and dunk, dink and dunk, dink and dunk, and hope and pray that when we dink and the guy catches the ball, that he breaks the tackle and he runs for another 10 yards. That's exactly what we're seeing. And it's got to stop. We got to start. We got to go downfield. And again, we're going to be playing against some pretty good football teams. And if we get behind the eight ball real quick in some of these games, you watch and see all hell will break loose.
Well, speaking of that, coming up 2 weeks from yesterday at Soldier Field, thankfully, it's the New Orleans Saints. New Orleans Saints, under Teddy Bridgewater, have just won three in a row and against good teams. This is last night when they were going through after the Sunday Night Football, they were talking about, you know, what are the best teams in the NFC right now. And Chris Collinsworth said he's looking at the Saints as one of the best teams in the NFC. So this is a very... This is a serious threat, and I consider this, like I do all games, to be a must-win situation for the Chicago Bears. Ed Obradovich, your final thoughts?
Well, I might have to go with you a little bit there. You know, in every game, there's one game to me that's not bigger than the other, but the one that's facing you, obviously, is the giant game. You know, you've got to take a victory. We're off 2 weeks to get ready to play a team that we can beat, and we're playing them at home, okay? And if things go right, hopefully they can win this game. I thought they would win yesterday, and I thought they can win the New Orleans Saints game. But I'll tell you what, after what I saw yesterday, that our defensive line gets slapped around like a bunch of little bad boy kids, I never expected that. And it's exactly what the hell happened, okay? You know what? The offensive line didn't meet the challenge, and neither did the defensive line. And the thing that's hurtful is that's where our strength is, up front. That's what makes this team, that we won 12 games last year, and people are calling us to go to the Super Bowl this year. The reason why, the people up front were getting the job done. But yesterday, they got it handed to them big time. They did not meet the challenge, and they got blown up.
Obi, I don't know what to say, but thank you, because you're probably going to be the only thing that gets me through this season, especially when we get into December and all these other... Listen, this is why they got to beat New Orleans, because they're going to... Wild card situation. You're going to be up against New Orleans when it comes to wild card time. You're going to be up against Dallas when it comes to wild card time. I mean, there are teams, the NFC, I don't think they're going to win the NFC North outright. I mean, Green Bay looks really, really good this year.
Well, we've got some games coming up that we have to go to Minnesota. Now, we handle Minnesota here, but we've got to go up there and play them up there. And we have to play, guess who else? We got to play Green Bay up there.
Yeah, we got to win those games.
And we've got to play the Kansas City Chiefs.
Oh, God.
We've got to play the Dallas Cowboys. I'll tell you what, my friend, they better batten down the hatches.
All right.
And never let a game like yesterday happen again. Never lose the game up front. If we play hard and meet the challenge up front, I think we can beat anybody. But you have to be there, guys. There's only 16 games. Play like you mean it. Play like you know what the hell you're doing.
Thank you, OB.
Thanks, OB.
There he goes.
When is Trubisky going to be back, Kev?
Well, they think he has a chance of being back for the Saints game, because if you factor in the bye, it's a full 3 weeks since the last he played. So he might be back for the game, and Akeem Hicks, we'll see. We haven't heard. That looked like a nasty elbow injury, though.
Well, he got hurt early in the game. I know that sounds stupid, but he got hurt early in the game. They immediately started to treat him for it. So that does give him an opportunity. I don't know that he necessarily gives you that much more, but he does give you mobility. Right, which you do not have with.
Are you talking about Hicks or what are you talking about?
I'm talking about Trubisky, yeah.
Yeah, Trubisky's the play. If he's ready to go, then, I mean, look, Chase Daniel did a solid job all around yesterday, but he also showed why he's a career backup.
Right. I'm just going to throw it as far as I possibly can. Although, you know, Patrick Mahomes lost yesterday.
He did.
First time.
He had a bad game.
First time in his entire career. Well, he was hurt. Oh, my God, he was
thinking
playing
about you,
hurt.
I go, that's a double whammy for Roe, the Bears, and then his boy Mahomes goes down.
He got hurt early in the game, came back. I mean, that's a gamer, man. That dude that's is a real gamer. Football player. He really is. All right, coming up, I got Blackhawks tickets for you and the fate of Cody Parkey. Yes, we're going to talk about Cody Parkey. You know why? He might have a job.
Sounds like it.
Coming up, the news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom, and let's listen to the sound of this. Caller number 19 at 312-981-7200 rips us off for tickets to see our beloved Blackhawks beat the pants off the Columbus Blue Jackets on Friday, October 18th, courtesy of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, and Plumbing. For all the right reasons, Four Seasons. Find them online at fourseasonsheatingcooling.com and tune in every Monday all season long for a chance to win a pair of Blackhawks tickets from Four Seasons. How about that?
Nice. Good luck.
Right there. They're nice seats, nice thing. And I feel very, very, I feel a complete sense of vindication that the Blackhawks, also struggling with the time zone, even though they had been there for 10 days by the time.
Okay. So maybe it wasn't.
Maybe
the
they were just looking to get home. Sort of I don't know. They hung out with Jaeger. I don't know. Jaeger. Wow. Maybe they hung out with Jaeger while they were with Jaeger, if you know what I mean.
They weren't with Jaeger. We were with Jaeger. Lauren Lapka saw Jaeger, right, mm-hmm. in the hotel you were staying.
You guys are best friends now, right?
I took a lovely picture of my parents with him.
I got to see that picture.
Would Jaeger do Jaeger?
I don't know him that well.
You should have asked him. Jaeger, would you like a Jaeger?
Oh, I'm sure nice. I might have got punched in the face for asking something that stupid.
It's just a thing. All right. Kevin?
Yes?
Did Cody Parkey just get a job?
It appears he is headed to the Tennessee Titans.
Oh, they deserve it. They're stealing all the other stuff from Chicago, like the residents. Right?
That's true.
Moving to Nashville.
Another Chicagoan moves to Tennessee. That's hilarious.
All right.
They got another one.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Titans kicker missed 3 field goals, and they had seen enough in him and Parkey's, I guess. That's
okay.
The option.
Really? Okay. They'd already seen enough. Well, welcome to the good times.
You haven't seen nothing yet.
Yeah. Oh, God. But at least he misses them with a flourish. He does something that's impossible.
It's a statement miss for sure.
Right. He hits something that is 6 inches wide.
You remember his misses. That's mm-hmm. for sure.
All right.
Leaves a mark.
Yes, he does. Unfortunately.
To the soul yes. of Bears Nation.
Right.
Who can forget?
Yes, they could have gone deep there, but that's okay. I don't want to get stuck on the notion of what OB was just talking about, that, you know, you got a window for that. Remember when the Bears won the Super Bowl, the next 2 years, the next 2 or 3 years, they went one and done in the playoffs. They lost their first game in the playoffs. And Chicago fans are like, what? What? When they were top ranked, right? Mm-hmm. They were top ranked in the NFC in 86. I don't want to, you know, don't get me started. Okay. Once again, Kim Gordon's got the WGN News and then a top 5 at 5 that you won't believe, and it's all coming your way next in 2 minutes on WGN. All right, my friends, you know what it's time for, don't you?
We do.
It's the top 5 on the Rokan Show.
5.
Let's go.
4, 3, 2, 1.
Now, it's the top 5 at 5 on the Rokan Show with Anna Tavlantis. Sponsored by the Hip and Knee Center, where they help you feel new again.
Ready?
Yes.
Yes.
Get on with it.
All right. Checking in at
number 5.
You know, a lot of people getting a lot of applause to this thing that's going on in Atlanta. But this has some impact on Chicago. I'll explain in just a second. Tyler Perry. Big international story.
Mm-hmm.
About Tyler Perry opening up the first ever fully black-owned film studio. He does not have, he may have some investment partners and some private equity involved, but, you know, this is his.
$250 million
Yep.
Studio.
And it is, they say, larger than Disney, Paramount, and Universal combined in L.A. I'd like to see a prove up on that, please. But that's what they say it is.
Big.
But they say it is big, and actually, and Tyler Perry is making a point. He would like to make sure that young men and women, boys and girls of color, have an opportunity to see that their dreams can come true, and not just, you don't necessarily have to be the artist or the athlete. You can also be, or you can be the owner. And Samuel L. Jackson, no less than Samuel L. Jackson, says the Tyler Studio opening tells the exact same story. Nothing is impossible.
Tyler has big dreams, and he has, you know, he has the ability to make his big dreams happen. And it's amazing. It's wonderful. It's going to be a wonderful, great thing for a lot of young people in this community or in this business now, that they have a place that they can, you know, come to and learn and understand and demystify the film process and hopefully become great filmmakers themselves and make this studio equal to Fox, Universal, and Warner Brothers and anything else that's ever been done.
Built on the site that served as a Confederate Army base during the Civil War.
First time ever. That's a great point. First time ever that Samuel L. Jackson completed a sentence without swearing.
Without a swear.
Yeah.
I think How did that happen?
Pretty amazing. That's one of the reasons we play that. The other reason, and I should mention, there is a, it's an interesting Chicago connection to this. So Hollywood is decentralizing. The film industry is decentralizing. A lot of actors and producers are moving out of L.A., and they're moving to other lower tax circumstances. And they, or for tax credits to make their movies. Louisiana is a big one. Right outside New Orleans, there's a large facility. Now, this one is in Atlanta. In Georgia, there's been a tax credit for years. South Carolina has a tax credit. Illinois has a tax credit. In Illinois, up until this creative accounting about how big the studio is for Tyler Perry in Atlanta, Chicago had the largest soundstage complex, single soundstage complex in North America, right here on the southwest side. At CineSpace,
right,
which is the home for, of course, Empire. That's why Jussie Smollett was on his way there after, you know, Subway and a short nap. He was going to be taken down there.
Heading over there. We got the Chicago Fire and his other, the other
all the Chicago
franchises
shows.
From the Dick Wolf are all potentially shoot some up there.
And a number of films, feature films, are made there as well, or partially made there. They also have a big technology suite of capability here. So it's a big deal. Now, the, what's going to happen, though, is now having, you've got these non-Hollywood competing little micro-centers like CineSpace. And you stop and you think to yourself, now we're going to have to compete with those. And the state of Illinois is going to have to continue to incentivize. They're going to have to continue to create production credits if they're going to keep that business here. Because that's a big plot of land, and it's revitalizing near Southwest Side. And, you know, God bless Tyler Perry. And, I you know, there's the, there certainly the, just the ironies of history and the, you know, the sensibilities that he brings to that, I applaud. But we got to make our dough here, too, as we like to say. And on the Southwest Side, they invented that expression.
I think they did.
Checking in at
number four.
All right, the president criticized Democrat-led impeachment inquiry today at a press event, and he called it a scam and cited his record as president.
You can't impeach a president for doing a great job. You can't impeach a president for having the lowest and best unemployment numbers that we've had in 51 years. You can't impeach a president for tax cuts and regulation cuts and creating, and even the ambassador would say, the strongest economy in the world. This is a scam, and the people are wise to it. And that's why my polls went up, I think they said 17 points in the last two or three days. I've never had that one. So I think it's very sad for our country. I think it makes it harder to do my job. But I do my job, and I do it better than anybody's done it for the first 2.5 years based on results.
All right. There he is. I'm not sure that I haven't seen that poll that he's referring to.
Yeah.
But I'm sure it must be somewhere.
There's a poll for everything right
must,
now.
I may have missed it. But there's other stuff happening today. That's the president saying that. There's obviously the bigger story, I think, today is the one concerning the Middle East and U.S. troops pulling out of Syria. That, to me, is without much warning. And that has a lot of people on Capitol Hill, including a number of Republicans, Lindsey Graham, even, upset about that. There's a lot going on. Do you know, it's funny, it's like there's a blizzard of data and information.
Always is.
Every day is like that. And this is that Ukraine story, or I'm sorry, Syria story is, that's one of your more consequential ones. Because then the question is, when you've got the Pentagon upset about it, you got a bunch of Republican senators who've been supportive of the president throughout Ukraine and other things, saying, hey, wait, you can't do that. That is then you know that there's something that should draw your attention for the moment. So we'll see how that all plays out. I have a feeling that may not stand. I have a feeling that you might see a reversal coming in that. But that is me. We'll get to your three, your two, and your one. But first, let's check in with Kim. What's coming up in the bottom of the hour news? Top 5 continues. There will be the use of the alarm tomorrow will be excessive.
I get the sense, no matter what they find, Kim Fox's name will come up. And you'll respond accordingly.
The over-under of the use of the alarm will be 7 tomorrow. For all you bettors out there, people who bet on every moment of the Rokan Show with Anna DeVlantis, 7 is your over-under for tomorrow use of alarm.
Number 3.
Fleabag creator Phoebe Waller-Bridge hosted Saturday Night Live.
How about that?
Yeah. That swept the Emmys this year. I started watching it. It's interesting. It's well done. She's brilliant. And I have to say she's brilliant because she's British, because that's what they always say. That was like in Four Weddings and a Funeral. I learned you just say brilliant to everything. How is it? Oh, it's brilliant. She's very, it's unique. She's completely the star, the writer, the director of the thing. It's really her vision. And I think that a lot of young women are going to relate.
Fun story. My mom asked if I wanted to watch that with her on the plane to Germany. I was like, I know a little bit about this show. I'm gonna pass on watching that with you.
Yeah, yeah. She's a sex addict.
Oh, yeah. Okay, right.
That's part of the deal.
I have not seen it, but yeah. Okay.
And so,
things that are uncomfortable to watch with your parents or kids.
It's on that list for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, they're getting rave reviews for this particular episode of Saturday Night Live because the writing was very, very crisp, including this sketch about a news anchor team doing stories. Two black news anchors, two white news anchors reading stories, and
a Fort Lauderdale man was apprehended outside of a Cracker Barrel for cutting brake lines on a dozen bird scooters.
See, only white people got that kind of time, okay?
Okay, yeah. He's white. So what?
So now we're down to 1.
It's not looking good for y'all today. In other news, a shopper was apprehended by security at Oceanside Mall for assaulting a man who stepped on his Air Jordans.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you say Air Jordans?
Oh, that's black for sure. Whoa!
You know, I knew it as soon as I saw it.
The point there, and I think we said that at break, the point there was that that it was two white people, two black people reading the stories, and neither the whites or the blacks wanted the bad guy in the story to be of their race.
Oh, I see.
So as soon as it started,
put it on them.
Right. Well, it started with the black anchors just being happy that it wasn't a black guy that was accused of whatever it was, and then it just kind of went around like that, which I think is follow along here.
How about this? How about a man on a rock climbing trip was mauled by a bison for the second time in 3 months? See, y'all don't learn. Y'all don't like to learn.
Okay, just keep reading. Keep reading.
This incident happened in the Utah National State Park.
Ugh, not looking good.
Family of the man, now identified as Laquan Jenkins. Yeah! Baby, what are you doing?
What an upset.
A Laquan rock climbing in Utah? That's okay. We still tied up, baby. We tied up.
Checking in. Oh, this is going to drive me nuts, too.
Number 2.
After falling behind 17-0, the Bears made a spirited comeback in the second half of the football game yesterday.
Why are you talking like that?
I'm trying to remain calm. The Raiders would pull out a 24-21 win at Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in London, where the Bears arrived on Friday morning, even though the Raiders had gotten there on Monday. They have a bye next Sunday. They take out the Saints on October 20th, and the Saints are coming off a 3-game winning streak. Now, this is normally where we'd play OB losing his mind about what he had seen. But in this particular case, it turns out Dan Hampton was the one who lost his mind.
They have been an embarrassment today. They got their ass handed to them from the opening kickoff. And I'm telling you this, Chase Daniel, you can't expect a quarterback to be error-free when he's got people in his face. You know how many times Derek Carr got hit today? You know how many times our great defensive line hit him? One time. OB got closer to him from the guy from our studio. I'm telling you, this is a debacle, and you hang it right on Matt Nagy's behind.
Ooh, boy.
It got hot in there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I was very upset myself.
On a positive note, Eddie Pinheiro tweeted out that he received an award from his home country of Nicaragua for being the first player ever to play in the NFL from Nicaragua.
Oh.
And that he got it in London. Hmm. So he's really psyched about that. Very cool.
All right. And finally,
number one.
In a white room with black curtains, near the station.
Ginger Baker, the British drummer best known for his time with Cream, has died. Many fans thought of Baker as a rock star when he teamed with Eric Clapton and Jack Bruce from the mid-1960s in that supergroup. All three were known individually in the London blues scene, and together they made rock history.
I've been waiting so long to be where I'm going, in the sunshine of your love.
So that is the... Ginger Baker is often considered to be the first great rock and roll drummer of that era that led to guys like John Bonham and Keith Moon and all the others that came after him. He was a simpler drummer than that. Neil Peart, the people who really changed rock, the sound of percussion and rock and roll. But it was Ginger Baker's style that was most quoted by those other drummers, John Bonham and Keith Moon and all the rest. Were like, you know, who did you want to sound like? And it was Ginger Baker, and then Ginger Baker turned around and said that, you know, he sort of came up with the whole Ringo Starr thing. So it was like he's one of the most important hands and feet of rock and roll history. Ginger Baker was 80 years old.
The top five at five.
Thank you very much, Kim. I'm beyond pleased to announce that Chicagoans are going to finally be able to weigh in on where they want their pot shops. My favorite news of the day out of the WGN newsroom with Kim Gordon. They're going to have community meetings. I love this. Just love it. Community meetings to discuss something that the community has absolutely no control over.
What do you mean no control over?
Well, all right. The mayor has already said, you know, she wants these dispensaries or whatever we're going to be going to be calling them. She wants them very specifically in neighborhoods.
Right. Seven zones across the city. And there's a cap on the number in every zone. Plus, the medical ones are already given preference.
Well, the owners of the medical ones.
That's right.
Right. They get a secondary place to go now. So if you got the you know, there's a medical one in the west, you know, sort of the medical district of Chicago by the hospitals or by county hospital. If you then, you know, you can choose a district that's not there. Right. And then the guys who are on the north side can choose a district that's not near that. So the guys who went with the medical licenses totally deserve to have first shot at this because they put up hundreds of thousands of dollars at risk just to get the license. It was $250,000 to get the medical license. And if you would have to give them that money in advance, the state, that in advance, and if you did not get the license, the state kept the money. How about that?
I'm surprised the state didn't just keep all the money.
They did keep all the money. As soon as they got it, they kept it.
And not give the licenses.
Well, some they didn't. There are people who lost $250,000 trying to get a license, and the state said, no, you're not going to get it. And the state, and they don't get their money back. So that was a risk that they all had to take. And there was incredible, the rules for medical marijuana, which went into effect, what, 2 years ago, were pretty, there were a lot of rules, what could and could not be done there. So, very, very well done. But now, or overdone, I should say. When I mean well done, I mean like a steak. It was that well done. But now the state, as Kim pointed out, there's going to be four nights of these hearings. Right?
Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday.
All right, three nights. I like a Friday night one because then that's the real dead enders. Who, you know, that's all they got left to do on a Friday night. These community meetings, you go to the community meetings and you're like, wow, some of the, you covered these as a reporter.
I've covered them, sure. Many of them. It usually is the same people.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't mean that necessarily a bad way. I mean, it's the same
humans.
Yeah, the same people show up for these meetings and then the same two people talk.
Right. And they're often there. They may not even live in the community that they are sitting in the community meeting at, but they're going to cause trouble until the business owners or the developers or the whoever are asking for whatever they're going to get are going to get what they're going to get. So they'll go away if they get something out of the deal.
And that seems to be true in some cases. Yes, I've seen that.
The new cannabis shops are not going to be what you think they're going to be. They are not. This is such an improvement over your corner hustler, with all due respect to the gang. These are going to be profitable businesses. I promise you this, and they should be. They should be able to be opened in legitimate places, because to get in to one of these businesses, there's more security to get into one of these things than there is anything else, including a bank.
It's like easier to get into your casino license. But they're also, the mayor's plan already has the restrictions that she'd like to see, like 500 feet from schools. They can't be in residential districts. They can't be in any building that has one residence in it. So it seems, and then she has that exclusion zone. She wants to see downtown on Michigan Avenue, Gold Coast, that whole area. It just seems like there's an enormous number. The amount of restrictions already being proposed, pretty steep. I think it makes sense to have people in neighborhoods weigh in. It just, they've already answered a lot of the concerns.
Too much. Because liquor stores don't have that. And liquor stores are a nuisance. These things are not going to be a nuisance. Liquor store, anybody who's got either an ID that says they're over 21 or looks like they're 30 gets in.
Right.
Right? And they can buy whatever they want, and people hang out outside. That's not what's going to happen with these cannabis shops.
Well, you saw one in California. You know what they look like. Yeah. I haven't
they're
seen
intensely,
them.
The whole point of this is that it's monitored. First of all, because it's a cash-only business at the moment. And it's a cash-only business because the federal government yet has legalized transactions using credit cards, essentially, is what the bottom line of that is.
Mm-hmm.
It's still federally against the law, even though the states supersede that. So it's not against the law to sell in the state. But if you're using a credit card, that is a national transaction. That's a federal transaction through the banking system. And so that is not yet allowed. Eventually, that's going to get fixed.
So it has to be hard cash?
Hard cash.
Remember now, those days when you had to pay for everything in cash?
Now.
I just went to a cashless place for lunch today. We don't accept cash for the safety of our employees. So that's the way it goes.
What does that mean?
Safety of employees. I guess.
Well, they probably don't want their waitresses or waiters to get robbed for their tips.
Wow, where was this?
Yeah,
where
I don't want to say.
You know, what area?
I told you where I had. It's in this area downtown, just blocks from the station.
Interesting.
Hmm.
No cash. We are cashless, And then the little small print said, because of the safety of our staff and our employees. Our servers and employees, something like that.
How does that... What's
well, it's like on an airplane. They don't take cash when you're...
Not anymore.
They
you know why?
Though, like a few years ago.
Yeah, you know why they stopped that?
Hmm.
Not because the planes were being held up. They were stopping that because because people were actually stealing the money who were on the inside of the job. That was
like
the problem.
Money.
Yeah. That's what was going on there.
Oh.
But the point is these being, the pot stores being actual real cash-only enterprises, there will be hundreds of thousands of dollars of cash.
Okay.
And they're going to have to be moving that cash with armored cars. And there, it literally, you're like walking into the green zone when you're walking into these things. There are heavily armed guards at the door.
Yeah, I'd imagine.
Everybody is checking ID, and they have to swipe your ID or take a picture of it before you go in. I know that's the California law. I believe that rule. That I believe is going to be the rule here in Illinois as well. So it's like there's no monkeying around with these things. And that's the problem that I have is that they're being, you know, the mayor, I think out of an abundance of caution and out of an abundance, she's got enough trouble right now. She doesn't need community groups getting all
she's
mad.
Got the whole city ready to go on strike.
But I think they do need to go out and maybe be a little more educational about it. With the communities about what they can expect,
yeah, what it
when
looks
these things
like,
open.
What it feels like. Will there be a bunch of people smoking all over the place? Will they be able to go outside and smoke and walk through the neighborhood? I mean, the answers to those kinds of backyard issues, I think it's going to be important. Maybe that's why they're holding this. It'll be informational, and they can let people know what to expect because you just don't know. I think right now people would have a feeling that they don't want one of these next door or you know right by you. But there's going to be a lot of pushback from people having them. So they need to answer all those questions. Good luck.
If they can remember the questions right after they're asking them.
Who's going to be leading it?
Exactly. I would like to have the Stoner community. And that's the funny thing. You know, the people who are behind these things now, these are not your pot dealers. This is a totally different. It's beyond big business. It is. You have venture capital involved in this. You have private equity involved in this. You have people... big time investors making big bets in this industry right now. Mm-hmm. And they've had to make bets in this industry in a way that is different than the industries that come before it because they know there's pent up demand for it. They know that there will be the legalization and the product that they're going to get is theoretically safe. The thing that's knocked them down a little bit here is the fear of vaping. But that appears all to be black market product that's making people sick. However, that still doesn't mean that vaping is good for you. And the more you know about the vaping, just as a kind of a bad thing to begin with for your body, is that may knock down, you know, the people who are like, well, I've always wanted to be a stoner. that whole premise of I was really enjoying a cocktail, but my doctor said it would be better for you, because I've had a doctor say this to me. It would be better if you maybe, you know, you smoke the pot, it's more natural. I'm like, I don't think so.
No.
Makes me crazy.
815, a texter reminding us, you can't smoke in the stores, no samples, no on-street or public smoking, and right. Not while driving either. So those are going to be the neighborhood concerns, I think. People are going to want to know what can and can't you do. I know they were talking about they have a marijuana cafe in some places in California. I mean, are they going to do that here? Are they going to designate certain businesses where you'd be allowed to smoke? None of that's been determined yet.
So there are, I do know of restaurant groups and of event planners that have already gone to the city to get clarification on this because they would like in on that.
A lot of apartment complexes won't allow you to smoke either.
Well, what the heck? Give me a list of them.
In your own home?
The point is a lot of places are
like
smoke-free.
Yeah.
Yes, because that was the case in Oregon, because I had to actually
hippies
report someone because they were keeping me up with their coughing all day.
Oh, you were the neighbor who...
Oh, my gosh.
Yes.
Oh, my God.
Excuse me?
Oh,
normally I would not.
Who here is surprised by this story?
Not at all.
I would like hands.
I mean, if you live there, that could be annoying. I agree.
I had to go to bed at like 7 o'clock at night, and all I would hear is... every 40 minutes. I'm not kidding.
Should have told him to try the gummy bears. For the gummies.
I'm surprised you didn't go over there yourself, Lauren. Knock on the door. Give them
I
a
don't
good
like s- controversy.
All right. Who's in there?
It was more so I was like, I'm just curious. Is your smoking rule for all kinds of smoking? They're like, yeah. It's like, okay, thank you.
So did they listen and they enforced it?
I eventually moved.
Oh.
But so that night, though, they went to
it wasn't
guy's,
just, no, it was every night.
Like an ongoing thing.
Every night, every 40 minutes.
So it was a guy like.
I think it was a girl.
Oh, really?
Oh, mm-hmm. Oh, she had it coming.
What?
Lauren. Not on Lapka's watch.
No, no.
I'm just a very light sleeper. I get very cranky.
Apparently. Well, but the coughing, though. Is that's I mean your initial response wasn't I better call 911 to help this person. It was like, all right,
she knew it. First I was like, okay, maybe they're sick, and then it was months and I was like, they're definitely sick. Not sick, you know. That cough. Yeah. You've heard people do that cough.
Yes, I've heard people do that cough. I can't take smoke into my lungs or any of those other things. Steam. All right. And the so it was a girl.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, just interested. Okay, all right. Well, what do you do about that? Well, did they stop that person?
Well, again, I never actually fully reported it. I asked.
We should do a follow up on this investigative report.
Do you remember the address and the apartment number? We can call right now and find out if they're coughing.
No, I'm not giving my old address.
All right, give it to the producers. They'll handle it. All right. So here in Chicago, though, as these hearings are going to go on, I do hope that they have people, representatives, who can explain exactly what this is. These are going to be profitable businesses in these neighborhoods, and they're going to be helpful, I think. And I oppose the mayor's opinion here that you can't do them on Michigan Avenue or something like that. I think it's actually perfect. If we're going to roast coffee across the street, why can't we, you know, sell Bud?
Right, the new Starbucks roastery is opening up. That's experiential. It's your be a one, different experience.
Right, it's your 1-2 punch. You go from that, and then you go across the street to the old Apple store, and you know.
Mm-hmm. Why not?
You do something like that.
We have 57 million tourists coming to the Chicago area. Right. Why not have them go ahead and pay some tax dollars?
I mean, there's two reasons to go to Amsterdam. The bridges and the pot, right? And the brownies. That was it. For decades, people have been going to Amsterdam for the pot. People would never go anywhere. The only time they've ever been out of the country was to go to Amsterdam. They wouldn't even go to Canada if it were possible. They go to Amsterdam. Why? Because they want the pot. You could do that in Chicago. And then people would spend more time, forget to check out of their hotels. Think about the incremental tax that you could make in this town. All right.
And all the great restaurants.
Exactly.
People would go to them.
Exactly. Raise the prices.
It's a win-win-win. Win.
This is the best. All right, let's check in now with Kim, find out what's coming up in the news at the top of the hour. If you're a lifelong Chicagoan, mm-hmm. or you work downtown, you probably have been to Gene and Giorgetti's, which is one of the great joints in the history of the term joint, right?
Absolutely.
It's a steakhouse. It's like an Italian steakhouse, but it's one of the it's got a bar that when you walk into, mm-hmm. it's somewhere between It's a Wonderful Life and Cheers, and it's like the most it's a mainstay of business people for generations. My parents talked about my grandparents going to Gene and Giorgetti's, and I on more than one occasion I know some people who were near the end who said they wanted their last meal to be at Gene and Giorgetti's. That's what it's like.
Well, weddings, special events, so many people I know have gone there just to celebrate and just have a great meal. And generations, like you say, Ro. It's like your dad went there, then you go there, and it's just amazing. It's an institution.
There's an upstairs where sometimes it's open for dinner, and then sometimes it's a special event, and then sometimes you're not allowed to go up there because God knows what's going on.
Who knows?
And that's exactly
who's
the point.
Who's asking?
So there was a shock.
I know.
When I woke up on Saturday to the news mm-hmm. that there had been a fire in Gene and Giorgetti's. How Michelle DiPetti is with us, mm-hmm. one of the owners. Well, how old is that building?
So the original wood frame building is actually from 1874.
Mm-hmm.
But fortunately, that part of the restaurant was not affected by the fire.
Because it would no longer be here if it were.
Correct.
That would be the case.
That is correct. That fire, that wood that built the building was foraged from the Chicago fire.
Oh, my gosh.
So, yeah, so we were extremely lucky that the, it was a grease fire that was in the kitchen. Unfortunately, that went up, straight up from the kitchen, up the chute, and then out the roof. But it was in the new section, which I use air quotes because that section is 25 years old. But new is relative at Gene and Georgetti.
Right.
My dad.
When did the first restaurant open? In that space?
The original, 1941. We opened in 1941 there.
And I saw some of the headlines. Is it the oldest steakhouse in Chicago?
Because
the Tribune said that, and Eater said it, and a couple others. Yeah. I did not know that.
And it's one of the few, it's one of the oldest left in Chicago, just restaurants in general. And then the same family, I'm third generation, so Gene was my grandfather. Yeah, and it is the oldest steakhouse in Chicago. Yeah.
Oh, wild. So the facade, the front of it that you would see under the L tracks, very unassuming, that we all know and love, that's all preserved.
Yep.
It'd be in the back. You can't almost, can you
so
see it?
So the kitchen is actually on the Franklin side, but it was inside. And so the majority of, there was some damage on the roof from the fire, and then there was primarily smoke and water damage. The firefighters did a phenomenal job of taking extreme care of the building. They were so compassionate about it.
Oh, that's
nice. I was the first one in my family to arrive that morning.
It was like 6:30 in the morning or something.
It was about 6:30, yeah. And I had arrived home from Europe. I was at O'Hare at 9:30 because I'm also a wedding planner. I had a wedding in Italy last week. So I got home a little jet lagged. I happened to be up, and I get this phone call from one of our servers that was like, you know, our morning kitchen guy, Danny, was there, and this fire started, and he couldn't get a hold of anybody. He didn't have my number, and it was a little bit early for my parents, so I was the first one to arrive on the scene.
Oh, my gosh. What were you thinking?
I didn't really prepare myself. I thought, okay, this is probably something small. I was a little irritated, to be honest, because I thought, of course, I'm jet lagged. I'm exhausted. Like, this is happening. This family business is always, right? And then when I...
this damn family business.
It's one of those things.
19 frickin' 41.
Yeah, it's like one of those things.
80 when years. When what am I supposed to do?
Right. Like, when you're in it,
now you're
like,
in charge.
People are always like, oh, my God, is it amazing? And you're like, But, you know, then something like this happens, and then all the jokes kind of go out the window. The street was blocked, the whole block, and there were multiple fire trucks. And I broke down. I cried.
Aww.
And I'm not really that. I'm not a crier. I was in tears, and police and fire were so nice to me. Like, the guys in the 18th district really took care of me. They were so good and, like, just really compassionate and kind. I couldn't really speak at the moment. I just remembered my grandfather being behind that bar, and I didn't know at the time that it had only been contained in the kitchen.
Yeah.
So I didn't know if the original building had been damaged. I didn't know what I was walking into. So it was a lot.
A lot to take in.
Mm-hmm.
Checkered tablecloths throughout Chicago should be at half mast right now, out of respect.
I agree.
Yeah.
Did you hear she mentioned jet lag and she wasn't on her A game, just like the Bears, Ro?
Please.
Just like the Bears.
Why did you do that?
Like,
now you're trolling me.
Oh.
Why would you troll me? Don't bring that. Do not follow this, Michelle.
Oh.
I will deal with
Sorry,
you later.
Michelle.
All right. So back to this. So in terms of the damage, is there damage upstairs in the upstairs part?
So the second floor had some water and smoke damage. And that's where the majority of the damage is. And then in the kitchen itself. So we're in the process right now. I have to give a major shout out to Care Roofing because they came. Mark Zaccaro came. The fire had gone through the roof and had left some holes. And I don't know if you guys remember, Saturday it poured rain at night.
Yeah.
And before that rain came, the roof was sealed, and they were able to help us offset. Like, we prevented additional damage. And in collaboration with another company called Restore Restoration, who does all of our
Trust me. Within 15 seconds, our sales guys will be calling those guys.
So
did you hear? Your name just got mentioned over by Gina Giorgetti.
They are amazing. They do, like, disaster assistance.
Yeah.
So they were on site with cleaning and all of that. Because you walk in when the fire department leaves, and although they are wonderful at their job, it was raining.
It's scary.
It was really unsettling.
Sight.
And, I mean, I was standing in the kitchen trying to assess what was going on, and it was raining in the kitchen, like, raining, and I couldn't
from the fire water from,
yes
from the
like
fire
ash
from the second
water.
Floor down
yeah.
And so the ceiling was gone. You know, this, and it was just, you look at your equipment and you just look at everything, and it's overwhelming.
Yeah.
So those two guys really helped kind of get me through that initial shock. And then the good news, like I said, is the original wood frame building was not affected. We are currently assessing what the damage will be, what needs to be cleaned, what needs to be replaced. Obviously our goal is to open our Chicago location as soon as possible. Rosemont is still open in the meantime. You can ding there if you want, because I just
the Rosemont Gin and Giorgetti still
actually
open.
Calling for it.
I know she is.
That's pretty good.
This is going great. So I know you have servers and staff and people who have worked there for years.
Yeah.
And now there's going to be a little break of work for them. But you don't have any estimate though of when
I don't have a specific
estimate.
They
come back.
We're trying to go as quickly as possible, but dot all the I's and cross the T's,
right,
and be really responsible. The whole restaurant itself, whether or not it's that newer building or the wood frame, it's an old restaurant, it's an old establishment. So we have to be mindful of what we need to replace and how all of that,
right,
is going to
work. Right, the structure of it.
Because
you get water, especially in the floor of the old, if it's seeping to the old part, you got to make sure.
And smoke can get in. I mean, I've learned more than I ever wanted to know about, like, how corrosive smoke can be and how it can get in between paneling and it can go into sections of walls and cause damage. And so there are environmental testers in there. We want, of course, when we reopen, to be clean and safe and ready for customers. So we're being very mindful of all the steps we need to take, and we're going to do it right. But we will be open again.
Okay. So you're committed to reopening?
100%.
Okay.
Yeah. I don't really have an option. My dad would never accept an alternative. Because then he'd have nowhere to go.
Right. I would have nowhere to go.
Right. All of us would have nowhere to go.
At least, you know, in my rotation.
It is in our rotation.
Yeah, it's tough to take it out of the rotation.
Sure.
What, in terms of the bar, which is for people who I know that so many generations of families in Chicago have, you know, done a special event there, whatever, Gene and Giorgetti's downtown. So that bar area is not affected in any way, that main floor.
Asking for a friend.
Just asking for a friend. Because anything happened to that Lucille
Please
Ball
don't
picture,
the bar.
I swear to God.
No, so the Mahogany Bar and all of some of the oil paintings, the Lucille Ball photo that you mentioned, those are all, they all had some smoke. They were exposed to smoke, not necessarily
damaged.
Well,
she was exposed to smoke for about 80 years.
She's used to it. Yeah, she's very used to it. She's she's the trooper. But the artwork and everything will be treated and cleaned, but it wasn't damaged necessarily. So, like, it still looks the same. So it'll still be the same.
All right. Just want to make sure everything's
It's okay. And don't.
So are we talking about weeks or months here, do you think?
I would say right now somewhere between weeks and months, I would say. To be. I can't really give, I'm not trying to be.
Wouldn't it be nice to be open for the Christmas season?
Yeah, the Christmas holidays.
Yeah.
It would be amazing to be open for the holidays, and that's fourth quarter. In the restaurant industry, that's your strongest quarter.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, it's like every downtown business does a Christmas party.
100%. Yeah. And, you know, we have a really great private dining department who is now reaching out to clients a little bit at a time. We don't want our reservations and our customers to panic. We're kind of going one step at a time. Being mindful of everyone that's booking.
All right.
So it could, you know, I don't know yet exactly when. And as soon as I do, we're going to use all of our social media channels and website, and we'll be emailing. I was trying to do like Instagram and Facebook Lives the day of, just so people kind of knew and didn't panic. Mm-hmm. We know how important those parties are. We're not going to leave anybody hanging.
Well, that's right. When you saw the alert initially, you thought, oh no, I mean, how bad is it? Because initially when it crossed Saturday morning, I thought, oh my gosh.
Right. Well, it kept saying like, I saw like consumed by fire and closed for business.
Right. There were a few words there that scared you.
I started sort of on our channels and on my personal social media kind of reaching out and being like, no, we will be back. You know? Everybody just needs to take a deep breath.
So. All right.
Yeah,
thank God. That's the only reason I got to. I'm just thinking what the efficiencies and gross domestic product in the advertising industry in Chicago is going to do. It's going to go through the roof because those people are actually going to have to work now as opposed to getting drunk at noon. And
can Uber out to Rosemont.
Give it a ding. Nicely done.
This thing's on fire.
Thank you.
Now.
Getting my mileage out of the bell.
Oh, good God's sake. Yeah, I mean it is like it's a murderer's row in there at any given time. I will often wondered, you know, since 1941, and it's been, I can only imagine, right? Because, you know, you talk about the generational stories and the families that have gone through there, and, you know, guys in, although they still wear the same clothes, you know, guys in suits and skinny ties, very sort of a madman through the madman era and all that.
We have a large female representation now too. There are a lot of women in there that are boss babes too.
Yes.
Can't forget that.
Yeah, that's
one
true.
In particular. That's
how you
paid
doing,
attention
bro?
To
I get a lot of that. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Anyway, the point is that you've got these. You got like generation after generation, and you just wonder how, you know, like it's almost in some ways it reminds people of the frailty of institutions like this.
100%.
You know, you don't want to lose institutions that are so, emblematic to what Chicago is.
I think that was what hit me when I was standing outside of the building on Saturday. You know, you take for granted. This has been in my family my entire life. It is 2 years older than my dad. Okay, and it's just always been. And when I was standing in front of it on Saturday, and the realization hit me that it could not be, it really shook me down to my core. And I think, you know, we've heard from customers. I've had people call and be like, we said a prayer for you at church today. I've had people
say a prayer for a bar. Honest to God, I get it. Yeah. Well, that church across the street.
The Assumption.
The Assumption, that was your family's church,
it still
right?
It is our parish, yeah. Yeah.
And that is the, that's right after Mass. It's like, you know, people sneak out of Mass early, so make sure you get a seat at the bar, which is a thing.
That's a thing.
Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think the importance of, it's great to live in now and everything is modern and constantly evolving, but there is something to be said for like nostalgia and the continuity of certain things that you can just hang on to. And Gene and Georgetti, I think, is really one of those things for a lot of people.
Oh, so. Yeah. It means a lot to you and your family, but think about what it means to many
others.
That's
why I was so grateful to be able to be here today, because it was nice to have the conversation about it and let people know, like, we will be back.
It's going to be okay. We're coming back.
Yeah.
All right.
Good.
Gotta
good
get,
to hear.
Got to, you know.
Bar's okay, Ro.
Right.
Yeah. Bar's intact.
You could take
Lucille
Thanksgiving
Ball,
off.
She's fine.
Right. But after Thanksgiving, I want that Friday after Thanksgiving, I want it to be, what do I got to do? We have to do like almost a Jimmy Carter, like raise a house thing over there. We're going to have to like, although you don't want the patrons of Gene and Georgetti's necessarily doing any of the carpentry, because that could result in a lot of problems.
Creative carpentry?
Yes.
Yes.
Things will not be exactly
artistic
right.
interpretation.
Yeah. But you know, we're here praying for you.
Thank
we don't
you.
Pray for a lot, but we're praying for this.
I really appreciate
and no
that.
Vodka was disturbed in this fire, was it?
No.
All right. Okay.
No. And no steaks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I think the steaks are probably going to go.
They were safely removed immediately, so it was all fine. They
Very
were never
good.
Damaged because they were in a cooler downstairs. They were aging downstairs.
They're in some firefighters'
no
cooler right
no
now.
God loves Gene and Georgetti's.
Of this fire. Yeah,
yes,
no
exactly.
God loves Gene and Georgetti's.
Well, I mean, I think God invented Gene and Georgetti's.
Yeah,
I think it's in the original. It's in the book of Genesis. Gene and Georgetti's.
It's very probable.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right, Michelle Derpetti from Gene and Georgetti's.
Thanks, Michelle.
Thank you.
Best of luck getting back on. Getting back
so much.
Open. And when you do, let us know.
Okay.
All right. Ro Con Show with Anna DeVlantis right here, 720 WGN. I just want to update a story that we had talked about a couple of months ago now, and it's back in the news, and I'm getting freaked.
Okay.
All right, so you've seen the story about the both a Navy and Air Force pilot in two separate incidents a few years apart.
I think I know where you're going here.
Had encountered a low-flying, very fast-flying, but low-flying craft that looked like a Tic Tac. One off of Puerto Rico, in the Caribbean / Atlantic there, and then I believe it was the Air Force pilot who saw it in the Pacific.
And both or all of them describing a very similar thing. One of them had video. In fact, there's some video out there of this Tic Tac-y thing with no real wings or
just it's
propulsion
a Tic Tac
mechanism. It just is a Tic Tac out there.
Right. And it was moving around and it was moving in a way
motions.
That you couldn't actually, a human flying it would not be able to live making the turns it was making. It was making turns that would create a G-force on a human body that would make it almost impossible. So it had to have been unmanned or other manned. And I don't like that term, other manned.
Other
they have used that term in the reports on this.
They have.
Right. It's either unmanned or other manned. Yeah. Like, oh, okay. Well, I don't know what that means. I don't know.
Couldn't it just be drone-like? A drone? Let's go with that.
Yeah.
Could it be that we've developed a tool to enlarge a real Tic Tac and make it fly?
Could be.
I like that.
That a little less scary?
I do like that a little bit better.
It helps us sleep tonight.
But now it turns out that there's more to this story. The pilot, the original Navy pilot who came out and talked about this, is back out now adding more detail to the story, which was in the initial reports, but nobody had really picked up on. Because they declassified. I don't know. I don't know if the Pentagon thought this was be a good distraction to declassify these things, or it's just like, hey, let's throw this in. People are already a little confused about what's going on in the world. Let's throw this. You know, yeah, we really have been looking for UFOs. I think the president did say he was going to declassify some of these things. I don't know that this has anything to do with that. But you know, because, yeah, there are people who want to know. There are people in tabloid television.
The credibility of these is the fact that they were Army and Navy pilots who were describing them while they were flying expensive aircraft. I mean, they weren't under the influence. They were very credible people. They've been flying for years. And they all saw this similar shaped thing.
Right. But there's more to it. Uh-oh. So the Joe Rogan podcast, very popular. Kids love it.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Navy commander, now retired, who explains what he saw.
So as we're looking around, we look to the right, and there's a yesterday was a perfect example out here. The water is perfectly calm, no white caps. I mean, it's literally a perfect San Diego, California day. And we see white water, something like if you see a seamount, you know, rock underwater when you're standing on the shore and the waves are breaking over it and you're like, what is that? It's usually because there's a rock under the water. So it looks like that, but it's about the size of a 737. It actually kind of has a shape of like a cross, and it's pointing to the east. So you've got the long part going east-west, and you got a couple of things going north and south. So as we're looking at it, because that kind of draws our eyes, we're like, oh, that's kind of odd. We look down, and the Wizzo in the other airplane comes up and says, hey, Skipper, do you? And that's about what he gets out of his mouth. And I'm kind of looking at the same thing. I go, dude, do you see that? What is that thing? And what we see is this white tic-tac-looking object just above the surface of the water, pointing north-south, and it's going north-south, east-west. It's just radically moving forward, back, left, right, at will. And it's moving around the disturbance, the white water that we see.
How big is this thing?
So, over time, it's about 40 feet long. And the way I estimate that is, I mean, I got a lot of time fighting other airplanes, so it's about the size of a Hornet. Fuselage, so that's what you see.
Yeah, right.
About the size of a Hornet.
The Hornet fighter jet.
Mm-hmm.
Right. The F-18.
More sizable than I thought. Mm-hmm.
So 40 feet, he figures. Now, here the crazy thing, though, is let's continue on. Then I'll tell you the crazy thing is. As if this isn't crazy enough.
It all seems kind of crazy.
And this thing's just going left. So the first thing you see when you look down, you go, and this is with our eyes. It's not sensors. Right, so we're looking down at this thing, and first thing you think is helicopter, right? Helicopters typically stay below 200 feet when we're out there, and they're just driving around. We're pretty far away from the ship for a helicopter, for one of ours. So what is it? So the first thing you look for is rotor wash. You know, if you've watched any TV show that starts kicking the water up, and you can see that. It's really easy to see from the air. So we're like, no rotor wash. Matter of fact, don't see any rotors. Don't see any tail rotor. Don't see any, you know, the main rotors. We're like, that's kind of weird. So as we're driving around, we're looking at this thing. We get to about the 9 o'clock position.
How far away are you from this thing?
I'm at 20,000 feet, and it's right down on the surface, right off our right side. So I'm probably maybe a couple miles lateral and 20,000 feet, and we're just watching it move around.
Oh, God. He also describes, at one point, as they got closer to it, a large black mass rose up out of the water, then all of the stuff goes away and the black mass goes down.
So the black mass kind of swallows it up.
Yes.
Oh my gosh.
So this has all been declassified. And this guy does not sound like a nut to me.
He does not. He's a veteran Navy pilot.
Right. I mean, I know there's a lot of nuts out there that sound normal. I'm probably one of them. But this is a, you know, that, I mean, okay, so the theory here, if you read these are not necessarily crazy publications, because I just recently saw a retelling of this story in a Military Times publication, in Air Force Times, about the investigation into this and what has been, you know, sort of why now are we discussing this? And they didn't really speculate too wildly, because they can't. But they said that, you know, they're continuing to have the people, the scientists that work at the Pentagon and try to figure this stuff out, are continuing to try to figure it out. Unless this is just a classified operation that very, very few people know about.
But then why would the Pentagon have released some of that information?
Exactly. I'm guessing. I don't know, to be 100% honest, if the most highly classified weapon systems that get worked on by us, they necessarily would call the Pentagon and acknowledge that and say, you know, stand down. Don't worry about it. Don't ask any questions. Because we do that in business. I assume they do that in the Pentagon. but it maybe it you know what's even a scarier proposition is it's not ours.
Right, that right? was
not
the thing.
Not that it's not from Earth, but it's not ours. Somebody else has
it. And in that video, that one video that was released, I don't know, what was it, 9 months ago, 10 months ago, a year?
Yeah.
You can hear the pilot saying it's not ours because they said they knew that their missions were flying at that time, and there's no way they would have had any kind of a test kind of situation going on in their airspace at the same time if it was government run by the U.S.
But if it was another government, shouldn't they not be in our space at all?
Well, they technically weren't in our space in either one of them. They were in international waters in both incidents.
Mm.
But, yeah, you still don't want them off your shore. You know, I mean, it's like, I don't know.
Not comfortable.
I'm not comfortable with any of what I'm hearing here. And especially now, and I'd heard this Black Mass piece before, and everybody seemed to gloss over it, and now it's kind of back in the news.
Now, when you say Black Mass, are you saying something that looked water-like or like
the
smoke-like?
Black Mass that came up out of the water and then went down.
But is it like a solid thing?
Only described as a Black Mass.
That doesn't help.
But like swallowed up the flying craft.
Right.
The aircraft, whatever you want to call this tic-tac-y thing, and pulled it into the water.
Right. And then they're describing the tic-tac-y thing, and then the separate thing is the cross.
Oh my gosh, like the smoke from Lost. Oh my God.
So is it a, I mean, do we have a wormhole? I mean, let's just think about the many different possibilities here. You got your wormhole. You got a UFO that's living under the water. Or the Russians really figured something out here.
They have some sort of technology that we don't.
Yeah. I don't think that's the case. And again, these videos, one of these videos, one's over 20 years old and one's 15 years old. And they haven't been able to figure this thing out.
That's crazy. He said it. He also says in the interview that they were actively blocking their radar systems. So there's additional capability.
There is in one. I mean, we've seen the video of this. I think it's Air Force video, if I'm not mistaken, that shows the thing moving. And because they were able to catch it on their FLIR system. They're forward-looking radar. Mm-hmm. So they were able to catch it and be able to and then what happens is once you get it in the box, once you capture it, like in the little target box, the system takes over and tries to keep up with it. And it was having trouble keeping up with it. That's the issue.
Crazy.
And you see it. I mean, there's a good 15 seconds where you see this thing moving back and forth, and you're like, what in the hell could that be? It's not a reflection because it's too specific. You know, and also a reflection wouldn't get caught by the FLIR. So it's like
strange.
I'm in a total freak out meltdown now.
Well, it was totally strange because, I mean, growing up, how many times have you seen the supermarket tabloids, News of the World, or whatever they are, with all the UFO stories? How rare is it to see on the front page of the New York Times a story interviewing Navy veteran fighter pilots seeing UFOs, something they're identifying as UFOs, and there really doesn't seem to be any answer for it.
Right? And just a week ago, there was another story that came out because they've come up. They don't call it UFO anymore. It's like a UAR or something. It's like
and
OAR.
The military
the band.
Has a different name for it right. than the general public.
Yes, but just to make us feel better, because if they said right, UFO,
you don't want to hear that out of like a commander or somebody right. high ranking in the military.
Next thing you know, it's on the History Channel, right? Unexplained UFOs. You know, it'd be something. This is the UAVs, unidentified aerial vehicles, and you're like, okay, well then that's fine. That could be somebody's Cessna. If somebody's Cessna looked like a Tic Tac moving at Mach 2 and turning right on a dime, sure.
Right.
Okay.
Help me, Obi-Wan Kenobi. You're my only hope.
Oh, my God.
These vehicles had no air intake, no wind, and no exhaust. And aside from drones, all engines need that to rely on burning fuel.
That we know of.
That we know of.
That we know of.
That our Pentagon seems to know about.
Yes. A chilling dark mass was even coming up from the depths of the ocean.
Who says the dark mass? Who describes it? That's the
That's Fravor, the guy we just played. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. He's the okay.
David
He's the
Fravor.
One who saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Yes, they were. They were. The Navy was in the Pacific. I guess Air Force was in the Atlantic.
Oh, got it.
Not that that's really the important correction that I have to make in this story.
The Navy has to help quiet people's fears and calm people down.
Yeah, what have they done?
They have called these unexplained aerial phenomena, unidentified aircraft, unauthorized aircraft, and
unauthorized. It is definitely unauthorized.
And here's the best one: suspected incursions.
Mm-hmm. By who? Umma.
Right. Yes. By whom?
And if there, I mean, there's nothing between. There's nothing of any a place except for a couple of little chain islands off the California coast. There's nothing out there between California and Hawaii, except maybe this black mass that is, you know, sitting under there.
Creepy.
Yeah.
Very creepy.
I think we should be out there. I'm not me.
No.
But somebody should
not
be
you.
Out there looking into
Definitely
this.
Definitely not you.